What was that again, Fred?
Did you ever think of getting in touch with Green before you took that strike vote?
Oh, yeah. But So we started working on setting up the meeting with Green on the 9th, the following day. The day of the strike was the 8th. Mm-hmm. On the 9th, I called Richard, and I told him what was happening, told him to get a hold of Green. And we're trying to have a joint... I was trying to make that meeting, that big meeting, a joint meeting.
Oh, I see.
And he... But it was by phone. I was... Richards was doing this for me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said no.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called Richards and I... No. So I told Loris, I said, well, I said, you know, this guy is not going to, doesn't sound too high about cooperating. And Loris said, oh, you know, he's afraid of us, and no. So I kept thinking that we had to bring the two groups together somehow, you know.
But did you ever think of...
I thought of it. On the 9th, on the 8th, right away, I thought about Green. But I didn't have anything to offer him, you know. And I had a hunch. Well, you know, we had run into that difficulty before, you know, with those chapters that he had.
Mm-hmm.
Those locals, a few people. And so what I did was... I think that meeting was set. This was the AWOP people, you know, the Filipino workers. So we didn't have much to do with that, except that I remember when we were still on strike, and when I heard about it, I wanted to. I had some ideas on what I thought
about their being evicted from the camps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had some idea as to what I would have done, you know, but I didn't, you know, it wasn't, you know, it was,
yeah,
not my jurisdiction. I couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
I felt like I shouldn't. But I thought that could have been played to the hill. And,
for compassion reasons.
Sure. And it was a very good issue, you know.
Yeah.
And they could have also tried to tie him up in court and with demonstrations and so forth.
This is what they all talk about. Whenever the Filipinos that I've talked to talk about the strike, that's the thing they talk about.
Oh, that could have been a tremendous issue. They could have had us, they could have pulled up a sit down, they could have done a lot of things, because they look at those camps as their homes, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't done.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't know, you know, the reasons. Of course, one of them was that they were very busy. But the other one, I think, was they have the liberty to do a lot of things that,
mm-hmm.
that we have, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, check the Stockton every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We made a statement to the press on the 14th of September 1965, telling the press that we would back the strike, you know, we would strike and join the Filipino Brothers and make it all one co-op, but that we had to have a... that's not us. They're talking about us. That's
yeah.
What they...
Oh, no. Well, that's all right.
Yeah,
go ahead, though.
Yeah.
That's
all
right.
But anyway, I'll go into it when I come to it.
No, that's all right. Go ahead from there.
Well, actually, you know, I think I talked to a person, I don't know, the period where I said that I personally was committed to it, but that we had talked to the membership and we were getting the plans ready to get them to vote and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Release that came prior to the meeting. The meeting was held on the 16th, but this was released on the 15th. It came out on the 16th.
Mm-hmm.
That night of the 16th, we had the meeting.
Oh, mm-hmm.
September 16th.
Mm-hmm.
It was on that day, so we could have had it 2 or 3 days earlier, but I we could have had it 5 days earlier.
Yeah.
But I waited because the 16th for me was a good day, you know, mm-hmm. so it was a holiday, and
yeah.
I put it all into... There were a lot of things I wanted to do for that meeting, but I didn't have the money to do them.
Yeah.
I wanted to also have it a little celebration, you know. Mm-hmm. And the strike, but I didn't have the money, so I had to settle for just a meeting. Mm-hmm. But we tried to be very good. We worked very hard to get the people there, and they came. They were coming out of the rafters. And I guess I better tell you here about the about Father Alibart. See, I went to talk to him, and he says, he didn't see, it didn't hit them about the strike, it didn't hit him until we got into it. See, he wasn't, the growers didn't associate the Filipinos with him, so they weren't bothering him, you know.
Right.
So I went to see him on the 10th, must have been the 9th or the 10th at the latest, to set up the hall, you know, and he said, sure. And we talked about rent, you know. So I think I agreed to give him $25 or $60. Must have been $25 because I know we didn't have that much money. And he said, fine. But then the meeting was for the 16th, but on the 14th, he came to the office. He was very nervous. The first time, the one and only time he came to our office, he came in and I was running a mimeograph, and he wanted to know about the mimeograph. He said, I had one like that. It was like a Stepney. And I knew it was something, must be something very unusual for him to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, why didn't you tell me it was going to be a union meeting? And I said, I did. He said, I told you it was going to be a union meeting.
What do you think it was? CSO meeting or something?
No. He knew about the union.
Yeah.
I used to talk to him. I knew him, you know, well. And actually what it was that he was getting, feeling the heat from the growers, you know. But I thought to myself, I'm not going to let him get out of it. Because if it had been something else, I would have said, fine, you know, go to the park or go to the restaurant and have a street corner and have a meeting. But to permit the growers to do that to him, you know, would be like permitting to us. So I told him, I said, if you don't give us a hall, we're going to meet there anyway.
Yeah.
You have to call the police to get us out. I said, because I know you're not doing it because you want to throw us out. You're doing it because you're afraid of the growers. And in order to fight that kind of fear you have, we've got to show you, you know, some little power on the other side. I said, you know, there won't be any violence. I'll be the first one to go to jail. It's in jail. And so he was caught between the devil and the blue sea. So all that night of the 15th, the 14th, the 15th, the phone kept ringing. The Gores conducted a phone in.
On him,
around the clock. And he was the man, when I went there on the 16th, about 2 o'clock, you know, he had baggy eyes and he was a physical wreck.
Oh, yeah.
And I looked at him and I thought, how can one be so coward?
Yeah.
Now, how can a priest sit here and take those bastards, let him dictate them? How can he be so coward, you know? What is this thing, you know, this?
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, I wouldn't let him off. And I said, no. I said, we're gonna have this meeting. I said, next meeting, we're not going to have it here. But you have to consider that the workers are going to feel that you're with the growers. And he's trying to play neutral. I said, no, you can't play it neutral. You're either with us or you're against us. You remember who said that? And so we had the meeting there. And finally, towards the end, he got some courage and came and talked about, oh, what happened was, see, he began to, I told him, I said, look, why don't you do this? Tell the growers for them to come to the meeting too, and to talk to the workers. And then he called them back, and when they refused to come to the meeting, he couldn't understand that.
Yeah.
He was sore at them because they wouldn't come to the meeting.
Yeah.
And this gave him
a little out,
you know. So he came and said the prayer, and stuck around for a little while and left. And that place was just shaking with people's jam-packed inside and out and in the back of the room out in that upstairs room was jam-packed and they had the windows open and peeking through the windows a lot of people. And we had people there from every ranch because we went around asking the names. But Camacho gave a very moving speech. Camacho had joined the union a few days before the road strike. And it was he who had really instigated the road strike and got a mess, you know, alerted to it. And there were people from, I don't recall their names.
Olivas.
Tamaulipas and in different places. Yeah. We got up, you know, and made speeches.
Yeah.
And it was a good, you know, a good...
You've described that.
Well, I did.
The other tape,
yeah. Dolores wouldn't let Hector Gallegos...
Yeah.
Gallegos, Herman Gallegos and Bert Corona and it was Nacho.
Yeah.
Or Hector Abatian.
Yeah.
Wouldn't let him in the meeting.
Yeah.
So this is for strikers only, we can't come in as a pro. This is a private meeting. People all over the place. But you know, she just stuck with her work.
Excuse me, this Gil's kid.
That was the first injunction we were hit with.
Lucas injunction.
Yeah. But they didn't know the structure of the union yet at that point. So they sued us under NWA FL-CIO or something to that effect, you know.
Yeah.
So that showed that they didn't know the structure that well.
Right.
But they didn't know, they knew the names. My name was misspelled, the first name.
Oh.
And Dolores' first name was misspelled. She was called Dolores.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And let's show how much they knew about us, you know. And that injunction and subsequent injunctions were never fought. We didn't have attorney. They were just stipulated to.
Oh.
It was very bad.
Yeah.
That's, that first injunction made me realize, you know, that that we had to, I knew about the fight, you know, the economic level here in Delano, and I knew that we needed a lot of help from the outside. I wasn't yet aware of the boycott, and you know, if I was, it was just very hazy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very, very aware that we needed a lot of help, and very aware that
was this guy Richards helping you then?
Yes, but.
Not
he wasn't here, not that much, you know, not to really be there, you know, fighting.
I think what Tommy really wanted to ask was getting hard.
Months, you know. And the injunction, you know, was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
It prohibited, you know. And the injunction was broken by AWAR purposely, but they never moved against him. It was so much confusion on both sides.
Yeah.
We were picketing Lucas, you know, helping them. See, one of the decisions that we made immediately was after the first day of picketing, we were staying away from what the Lucas were picketing in the beginning. And then I told us to clear with Larry and see if we were able to go help them picket, you know, back and forth.
Yeah.
And see, what we're doing, we're spotting the, we had 3 cars going almost day and night, you know. And every time there was a big crew, they would, you know, they call and they come.
Yeah.
They call, they would go back and find the pickets. Sometimes the pickets had moved by the time the car came back. It was mass confusion. But it was effective confusion, you know.
Sure.
And because there were a lot of people on the go, you know, and doing things.
Yeah.
And although it was confusion in details, there was no confusion. There never was any confusion in the go, you know. That was very plain for everybody. And but when the injunction came and then subsequent injunctions came and then the way they were handled, you know, I was very disappointed. And I became aware of that first injunction, you know, that that we had to have a real legal organization going, you know, for us.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise we couldn't win.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise, you know, we could give them the... I remember asking the attorney from San Francisco, can we do anything about it? He's an experienced labor attorney. He said, no. I said, you can't do anything. I said, no, this injunction, if we go, it'll be worse. And I said to myself, well, that's a lot of nonsense. I know that something would be done if we had an attorney here working with us. I knew he would find a way.
Yeah.
I was just convinced, you know. Well, as it proved, you know, I was right. We, years later, you know.
Sure.
We found that they can get injunctions, but...
Very next year.
It'll cost them a hell of... Right. It'll cost them a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
See, the thing was that we didn't have any attorneys, and you can't run a strike with volunteer attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
No more than you can run a clinic with volunteer doctors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or a union with volunteer organizers.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
If they're not devoting all their time to it, then they
get completely out of touch.
Right. So,
We'll go to the next one.
The meeting was held on a Thursday, September 16, 1965. And on September 19th, that same evening, on the 16th, I called another meeting for September 19th on a Sunday. And it says there, the American Legion Hall. Mm-hmm. We had to go there because we couldn't get the whole church.
Church,
the father, yeah, by that time was just completely, if he wasn't against us, he was so frightened, you know, terrorized, that he wouldn't let us meet there. And
was that the night before?
The night before. And we met for the sole purpose of selecting picket captains and bringing some kind of organization to
that's
the... It was a good meeting, but there was, it was very difficult because there were three times more people than we came to that hall, you know.
Yeah.
And so I started meeting inside, and when I saw all the people, I told Lourdes to take them in the other room and have another meeting herself. So she took them to the other room and had another meeting there, and then... She
took who?
Dolores.
Who did she take?
The overflow. See, there's two rooms.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
And the other room was jam-packed, so she called in a meeting in the other room, and we were having a double meeting, you know, so we could... And then outside, Jim and some of the other fellows were outside trying to get the people, you know. And then we turned up the... we had a very large, very good speaker, so we turned it up.
So they could hear
that. Do you know the first meeting, whose speaker we used for the first meeting at the church?
Oh, Jerry's?
No, the CSO.
Oh.
The Delano CSO.
Oh, yeah. First and last.
Yeah. All right. And I began to pursue that line that we were together, you know. And I and Larry began to do the same way, the same thing. Later on, you will read where Green began to try to pull us apart, you know. But by that time, the...
line's been established.
Yeah, what do you call it? The bone heels?
Knit. Did it knit?
It knit, you know, and it was very hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I told you about the meeting with Al Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I read a whole tape. I listened to a whole tape on both sides while I was up there this last time. And he was one of the, some of the students went up there.
Risco.
Yeah, Risco. Well, yeah. His voice doesn't come out in it. He's got a couple of students whose voices come out in it, not Risco's.
I see.
Yeah.
And what did he say?
Oh, well, you know, you can imagine. You know, everything was going to be all right down here. You know, everything was fine. And it's just a matter of time and money now. He didn't have to worry about it anymore. Everything's going to be okay.
It happened on September.
They go to show you how little...
Cesar Chavez on the Al Green civil rights mess.
Yeah. They go to show how little understanding he had of the people and the people... and the times and the issues, you know.
Yeah.
How little he knew about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know very much, but...
Well, you know what he said. He said, well, you know, there's no civil rights issue here. After all, who else is working out there? They're all minorities. You can't have any civil rights issue when everybody that's working is a minority. You know.
Yeah. See, the mistake was that... I'm sure that both of us looked at the problem the same way, you know. But he had a hang-up where I didn't. And his hang-up was that... he wasn't about to identify with the Negro and the civil rights thing, you know, because civil rights and Negro meant Martin Luther King and meant all those things, you know,
mm-hmm.
which I, you know, very readily identified with.
Yeah.
And that's where he missed.
Yeah.
There was a beautiful walkout.
This is a walkout of 36 workers at Espoto.
I was with a group of pickets and we... in fact, I wasn't leading them. I think it was Dolores who was leading them. And I happened to be looking for them, and I saw a caravan with a flag, so I just turned in and followed them to wherever they were going. You know, I knew they were going someplace where there was a crew, and they had started a crew right in the corner. And so you could get them on both sides. There was a street, you know, corner, county road.
Yeah.
And we just took pickets that way and that way, and then we began to...
Was this real early in the morning?
No, this is already, no, this is about 8 or 9, you know. And we began to talk to them. And they began to come out. And I was really, really surprised.
I bet he was.
Just one, and then two, and then pretty soon three, four, five, and pretty soon everybody walked out.
Was he there?
Sure, he was there.
Oh, God.
He was cutting nails.
Oh,
ooh, he was fuming. He was very, very mad.
Yeah.
And he was cussing us and calling the women to get my horse. And, they were pompous. They were
arrogant.
And stupid.
Yeah.
They didn't recognize the force that was building. You know, we didn't either. You know, but we knew that we had to do that. But they had no regard for the in other words, I can forgive him for being pompous and arrogant, and you know, but I can't forgive him for being stupid. And that's
mm-hmm.
what's, you know.
Yeah.
They could have stopped that strike right then if they wanted to, you know. But they were stupid, you know.
So.
But see, because
made all the difference. The,
well, you know, it's the haves, you know.
Yeah.
You always react the same way to the have nots. Historically, it's the mm-hmm. same historical reaction, you know. And they were reacting pretty much according to pattern, according to what we thought they were going to be. They did. Was it Ginsburg?
Mm-hmm.
I remember that one. That wasn't the Georgia thing.
No, that came later. That was like the following year.
Ginsburg had two decisions in it. He's a good judge.
Very good.
I know the whole valley, he's about the only judge that has the...
Yeah.
That calls it according to law, you know, not according to politics.
Yeah. Has he come up for another election lately? Since he came out for us in the Georgia thing?
I don't remember. But he's still there.
Yeah.
Okay. The first arrest that we had, Gilbert Padilla was running that picket crew, and they were on the corner of 36th and Avenue 36 and Avenue 144 near Ernie Mart. And there were. We had a family in the strike whose mother-in-law, we had a man in the strike whose mother-in-law was the crew, pusher of that crew, who came out and falsely testified against Urendi and Otis. And it was the first who were arrested.
Yeah.
It was a crass thing. It was just, you know, just
yeah.
sickening.
Yeah.
But they were the two, the first two victims.
But they hadn't done anything.
They didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was, the Erie My crew was really upset.
Yeah.
Well, we picketed at her home, you know, that evening.
Oh.
And she cried, and Pagliuro came in with his gun, and...
Is this the one that's coming up?
No.
Oh, this is
another
one.
They went over there and picketed at the house, you know, and
yeah.
Pagliuro came in, he called him, came to rescue her, came with a gun, you know.
Yeah.
And, his foreman, either one, you know, they came with the guns, and they went right up the house and parked their pickups, and they got her in, and... They put in a pickup and drove away, you know. Real Western-like.
Yeah.
And she was very upset, but that picket line really bothered her. I think they cleared her and joined us for picketing at home.
Well, they did on the other one. Anyway.
Margarita or something.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. That,
this is the first round.
That we had in Delano, and the idea was to see. It was very difficult to demonstrate to the community, you know, power.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were out and among the vineyards, you know, and
yeah.
there had to be something visible, you know.
Scattered.
It was scattered, so we had to bring them together and then bring, and there was also give the people from the outside who were beginning to come to Delano some kind of association. And I thought that the best way to do it was to have a mass,
mm-hmm.
and then have a march first
mm-hmm.
with flags and everything, and then have a mass, you know, after that.
Yeah.
And, it went very well according to plan. It was a very good march, you know. And then people came out, you know how they come out of their homes, and they began to join.
Mm-hmm.
And I put several guys on each side of the street. As people came, you know, or cars drove by, you know, we asked them to stop in a friendly way, you know, and they would. They leave the cars there, and they jump, and it became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You know. It was very, very good. Second grower, I guess, that was arrested.
Yeah, Stanley Jacobs.
Yeah, the first grower that was arrested is the guy that his ranch is right here to my left from where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
His name is, I forgot. Anyway, he was the one that blessed it at the picket signs, the very first day of the picket line.
Oh, he threw him down and then shot into him.
Yeah, and then Vernon.
Nelson talks about the Anna Vernon.
That was over there at the, that was at the, right at the corner of Ellington as you go into the on-ramp to the freeway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I never knew what had happened. This is a Filipino affair, you know.
No, this is Pickett Beach's foreman of Grape Crew.
Yeah. I think that, I don't think that he was beaten. I think that there was a, they came to the house to talk to him, and there was an argument. And then the kids, there were young Filipino kids, you know, were trying to prove to him that the Filipinos were with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him to come, you know, to with him to show him the hall and how many people there were. But, and he said, all right, I'll go. He took the challenge and went with them. But the wife, as I remember, the wife didn't want him to go, and so she began to make all this fuss, and she tried to bring the charges of kidnapping. And I told him that I thought this should be a, after it was planned and everything.
Caesar called Larry.
And I told him that I thought this should be a solidarity march, and would he care to join with us and bring his Filipino brothers? He said, oh, wonderful, you know.
Yeah.
So that was the first time that we marched together, and we were up in front, you know, so that was displaying, you know, to the people that were together, you know, and to the press and so on. How much work we did. Now that you've got to, that we're looking back at it, it, in my mind, it stretched over a longer period of time. We were compressing a lot of stuff into it. God, we were going day and night.
Sure. It's only been going about 12 days now.
12 days?
Yeah.
It seems to me like that march was a long, long time after the strike.
Yeah,
we started moving right in high gear, I guess. Yeah.
Never let up. Just kept going faster. Go ahead.
Is that picking it up?
Representatives of the Northern and Southern California Councils of Churches had spent part of 2 days observing the strike to praise the police and union officials for handling a potentially dangerous situation called on growers and representatives of the striking figures to conduct talks, and said we have offered our help.
They came, this was the Southern California Nevada Council, I think. They came and, I don't think to this day they passed a resolution for us.
They just studied.
They studied, you know. They always hung back, you know, but
it helped anyway, didn't it?
Yes.
Just the fact they were here.
Yeah, and it was a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah.
But we couldn't get them to. We wanted an outright condemnation of the police because they had cars parked.
Yeah.
And they would follow. You know, the moment a car came in, took license number. The moment somebody got in that car, he would be followed. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything he did, he'd get a ticket. It was, you know, perfect harassment.
Sure.
And they hung out there for months and months. And we couldn't get anybody to really, you know, move against them.
Yeah. So were they given these ministers tickets too?
No, they didn't give them tickets, you know. But I, we showed it to them, and they couldn't move. And said, "Well, they're not doing anything, just observing." You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We began to call the police and to tell them who we were going. We called the police department and say, "Car number so and so, red car." Is leaving the office. They walk office. We're going to blah blah blah. You know.
Yeah.
So this, if you don't want to follow us, this will save you some time. You know. And we call them. We used to report to that car so and so Volvo. You know, my car is leaving in about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's going down to the post office. And just kept calling him. You know.
Yeah, they must.
Yeah.
Give him fits.
And I remember, because this won't be in the tapes. I remember about the harassment in that first 2 week period. We had the fire inspector, the building inspector, the health inspector, the building inspector, name it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody was here and giving us fits, you know, just trying to, and we had big arguments with them. They come in and we take them on, you know.
Yeah.
It was bitter arguments, you know, and we accused them of, you know, well, it was outright harassment, you know.
Sure.
The Delano Records will produce
that kind of thing. 65, San Francisco clergymen will aid Delano grape strikers.
That was our first official outside the migrant ministry, outside action for us. And,
so
that's
my figure.
Yeah, that was the first publicized action. And it made the growers go up the roof, you know.
Yeah.
And And since then, we've done about 1,000 of those.
Reverend Francis Geddes.
Who used to
October
be...
October 1st, 65. Indeed. Court order restrains current pickets.
Mm-hmm.
Order.
Oh, wait a minute. Tell us where.
Al Masakian.
Oh, yeah. That Al Masakian was... Oh, that was a tense moment. See, we got the injunction in the morning, and I had to go to Bakersfield. And so I took the injunction with me, and I was living in the door when I got it, and I didn't read it or anything. I was on my way to Bakersfield to do something. And that late afternoon, the pickets didn't know, and they were picketing Masakian. So the cops came, and then they blockaded the two streets. And they had about 200 people in there. Huh. Wouldn't let leave, you know. Wouldn't let our pickets leave, so I had to stay there for about 3 hours, and they were calling back and forth. They called the judge and everybody. They were trying to get us on the court injunction, but it was just...
Contempt.
Contempt, but it was just a little bit too much. They wouldn't go with it. In the power structure wouldn't go with it.
I see.
There was just too much, you know.
Yeah.
But they harassed us pretty bad. The sheriff did that. And I think that there were split forces there. Some wanted to do it and some didn't. You know?
Yeah. They finally a lot of people, too.
Yeah, a lot of people. And I was praying that they would. When I heard it, I said, wonderful, let him do it, you know.
Yeah.
Let him do it. And I sent everybody from the office to go to the picket line. And they let him go in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They called ahead this blockade. But they pulled back.
In.
The cops pulled back in and arrested. I told you in those days we were being served, you know, Cesar Chavez, AWOC, FLCIO, or Cesar Chavez, NFWA, AFL-CIO.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't know us.
These were all great pickets. And that was Bruno DeSpoto and Judge Myers' court.
How do you think we could get in touch with the thing down there?
That's Judge Myers and... I think it's in Tulare County.
Mm-hmm. His photo stuff is over in Tulare County, yeah?
Yeah, most of it is. Uh-huh. And what I was trying to do is, the boys were trying to declare the strike illegal and the picketing illegal. They were trying to enjoin the strike, not the picketing
thing.
Only. The whole thing is like you can't strike, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we weren't worried. We thought, you know, all these... stupidity they're committing are really playing. You know.
They're learning a little labor law as they go along. You're teaching it to them.
Yeah.
October 2nd, Central Labor Council of Fresno Madera County voted to organize a caravan to deliver food and clothing.
That was AWOC. At that point, we wouldn't get any help from any of the unions. Because,
oh, that was just AWOC, huh?
Yes, all the union help would not come to us. Union people would come, some and would say, you know, we're terribly sorry, you know, we'd like to help you, but you're not part of the FLCIO.
Yeah.
And we used to say, that's right, we're not people. I said, you're right, we're not people.
Yeah, good.
That was my standard answer to them.
Yeah, good.
That was
actual pressure.
That was the home of Mr. and Mrs. Alex.
Some of them were proud of home.
Federal
Bureau. That would be. Some of them were probably being sincere about it. Some of them were just using that to put pressure on them, didn't they?
No, I think the ones that came here were sincere.
Oh, yeah.
There was no real pressure from that source. You know, most of the pressure came later, and it came from it came indirectly. You know.
Yeah.
No, those were sincere guys, but they're going to be good enough for the FLCIO.
Yeah.
And I'll say, well, you're right. We're not people.
Yeah.
Ron Taylor's story. With only half a headline by regarding violence and near violence in the field.
Now, that was the first injunction. that they got, this was handed to AWOC. And as I recall it, there wasn't a big fight on it, you know. And I was very upset. Well, you know, I didn't like it because I knew we were going to be doing that ourselves and they were going to be joining us, which they did later on.
Mm-hmm.
From they boxed us in, we couldn't pick it in the fields and we couldn't pick it, you know, in the home.
Yeah.
But I talked to some attorneys and they said, yeah, you can do that.
So and later on, 2 years later, when we tried to do the same thing down at the Mars strike, you knew it was, we found out they could do it down there too.
Yeah.
Formerly a foreman at Seminovich. Taylor's story was only half a headline by regarding violence and near violence in the field.
Is it off? Pause. Did you read it?
No. No. But I think it was sort of a recap of several of these things that had happened on the field.
Yeah. There was, you know, all these stresses, and I don't remember very well what you were telling me about the night of the meeting right after the Georgia incident.
That comes in the following year.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that now?
No, you'll remember to ask.
Oh, yeah,
me.
Sure, well, I've got it written.
I was very, very adamant.
Oh, yeah, and I thought, you know, I attach more importance to it now because of what happened later, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the past and on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't anything that, you know, you just thought of overnight. And you were trying by friendly persuasion, wow, you know, very forceful persuasion, but at that time to get him to knock it off on the violence. You know, you were bawling them out for what they had done, even though they came to the aid of a woman.
Yeah.
You were bawling them out.
Did they feel bad? Because I never heard.
Oh, yeah. And they started taking you on about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was sort of a nip and tuck there,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of honor, you know, and protecting the female and all this. And of course, Ida just sat there looking so sad. I remember, God, I felt sorry for her because all this was going on, you know, back and forth, and here she was the one that was involved and whose aid they had sprung to and got involved, and so she felt, you know, in a way, responsible.
Yeah.
And then Dolores got up and... But you don't remember that too well, huh?
No.
Yeah.
I don't... I remember, you know, I remember the pain that I got when I was in the negotiating with the growers, you know, and there was this violence, you know.
Yeah.
I told the woman I talked to, I told the company, but what I thought was, you know, I thought something else, and I thought, I was very mad, you know. I thought, stupid asses, you know, that's our guys, you know, to be sucked into one like this, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't say it, tell anybody anything, I just told myself, how stupid can they be to permit themselves to be sucked into something like this.
Yeah, well, you were very upset, and that came out at the meeting that night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it took up, I'd say, at least half of the meeting,
mm-hmm.
going into the whole thing, and then hearing Vasquez, I remember he got up and talked, and he was telling about, you know, how it was because a woman had been hurt, knocked down, and Rosas was in the back of the hall, and he had his head all bandaged, all you could see was his eyes, you know, everything was all covered up. And I can't think who else.
In retrospect, it must have been pretty hard to tell some of those things, especially for the AD beating up the doors.
Oh, yeah. And of course, they weren't telling about the other side, what they had done to the growers. They weren't bringing that out.
Yeah.
But well, you had heard.
Nobody had to tell me, you know. I know these things, and I know what happened. There's always two sides.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember the incident, the meeting, you know, but I didn't know that it had been that hard, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very dramatic meeting. It was the first one I'd been to, you know. Mm-hmm. That was my introduction to the strike.
Mm-hmm.
When all this stuff came out, and you were being very firm, you know, forceful, and laying down the line, and scolding them, you know, for what they'd done. And here they were still licking their wounds, you know, and still hurting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And you know, they were the chivalrous gentlemen that had sprung to the aid of the lady in distress.
I guess that had a lot to, that must have had something to do unconsciously, you know, because I remember thinking of the incident. But that must have had something to do with my, at the end of the fast I talked about machismo, you know, and violence, you know, and
right.
How.
Right. Right.
Maybe that had something to do with it.
FWA's leader, Cesar Chavez, and assistants Dave Havens and Drake, who are setting the civil rights tone to the strike. Chavez pointedly declares it is a civil rights matter that deals with minorities.
That gave me a beautiful platform, you know, to speak out.
Yeah.
Well, it was true that it was a civil rights thing. It is, you know. Anytime you strike in the valley, it becomes automatically a civil
sure.
rights thing. But more importantly, you know, I wanted to make it clear for everybody to know that where we stood, you know.
Right.
I thought it would be very educational for our membership, which was very, you know, naive of what was taking place in the South. No, I didn't know that much. And,
mm-hmm.
But the moment they began to struggle, it was very easy for them to understand. And on top of this, if you could tell them a few things, you know, it was
yeah.
really... like a sponge, you know, take it in.
Yeah.
It's amazing how people learn when they have to because of conflict, as opposed to what people are preached to, but there's no learning.
Yeah.
No learning experience to attach it to.
Right.
Yeah.
No frame of reference.
Yeah.
My wife tells of force used by union workers. That's Mrs. Fiddlebarrow.
Now, you know, Ms. Fiddlebarrow is the one that was involved in organizing all those opposition groups.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, she, including the very last one, which
facts.
Was Women Against Chavez, Citizens for Facts,
yeah.
Delano Citizens for Facts, and then after that it was one called Delano Concerned Citizens, and then they had a couple of meetings, and then
yeah.
they... Mothers Against Chavez and all these things.
Yeah.
And she was involved until the last one was the FWA.
She was in that too.
Oh yeah, she was the one in Congress.
Was she in the Kern Tulare thing at the very beginning too?
Yes, she was in it too. That was the first one, yeah.
yeah.
That was the very first one, the
yeah.
Kern Tulare independent.
Right.
Yeah. And I sometimes wonder, you know, whether she did this, you know, because or what had happened, you know, the conflict that the Filipinos and she had with him, you know, or the husband or that, or whether she did this because she was, you know, really against the union.
Yeah.
And now, when we've seen the whole picture, you know, when we see that what she's done, you know, about the submitting the information to the government, you know, on the fake company union, you know, I think that deep inside of her, you know, she is for the union. I think so.
She's been working with Jerry then.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Undercover, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very something very important. See, I've met her two or three times, and I smiled to them, you know, and I bowed to them. You know, I said hello, you know, and they smiled right back. They never.
Huh.
She was one of them was cussing me once, you know, and I wondered. I said, what have I done to you? She said, you don't even know me. How can you hate me? You don't even know me, you know.
Yeah.
And she got very you know, I said, I don't hate you. And I said, listen, I mean, that you that were after it's the growers. And but one was, cussing me out. So I confronted her right on the spot, you know. And when I told her, I don't hate you, I don't hate you, I'm not fighting against you. And they got kind of shook, you know, and they stopped. But then afterwards, you know, they never...
Yeah.
Like I go in the restaurant, you know, and someplace, and I see them, you know, I say hello to them. And I smile, you know, and they smile back. It was kind of a kind of a thing.
Mm. Mm.
But of course, they went out of there, they did their thing against me,
sure.
Against the union, but...
Yeah.
I don't think that they... Deep inside, I know that, see, they weren't labor contractors, they weren't crew foremen, they weren't making money, so it was just one of these things,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I don't think they could be that much against, you know.
Somebody just probably played them up.
Yeah. Now, I can see when somebody's making money and directly you're hitting him as well as the court.
Yeah.
I can see that, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why some of these girls are so vicious, you know.
Sure.
But not that.
Yeah.
Five. Unions deliver food to strikers. Filipino consul do.
That was the first union caravan that came, but they didn't come to us and we were starving, you know. And they came to AWOC and they left the food at AWOC. And our guys, I remember some of the people came in that were very concerned, you know,
sure.
About not having food. We didn't have food. And it's all the food being loaded over there, you know.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, this is the FLCO from the Bay Area, you know, and I was hurt, you know,
sure.
People would see that, you hadn't seen, you know, for instance, when I, just like when, you have a candy or something, and there's a baby around you, you know, and
yeah.
He wants it, and you're keeping it, you know. I feel very sad, and it was...
just tantalizing.
Yeah. And also demoralizing.
Oh, yeah.
So we started organizing food caravans, and the church was the first one that brought food to us. Well, it was one of the reasons that the church was... so involved, you know, because they themselves, when they came in, they could see what they had and what we didn't have, you know, and they didn't know where their efforts had to go, yeah, what
yeah.
Need was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that the others had that much either, you know, but more than we
it's
had.
Something.
Yeah.
Council of Northern California, Ann Draper is mentioned, the Amalgamated Clothes Workers, students from the University of California at Berkeley, joined the line. They were in the picket lines yesterday.
October 5th.
65 Filipino consul urges pickers to resume jobs, then bargain. October 6, 65.
That was a repeat of what the Mexican and Filipino consuls have been doing for all the, about this time, you know.
Yeah.
And
can't spoil for the growers.
Yeah. And I was worried that the AWOC leadership wouldn't take him on, you know. But no, they responded well to the occasion. I remember talking to Larry and I asking him what he was going to do, what they needed help. He said, no, this is a Filipino matter, brother. We'll take care of him. And they took all the Filipinos and they picketed his home in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And he was upset.
Yeah.
And then they sent telegrams to the Philippine Islands and they got hurt, you know. They got him to, they told him to keep his nose out, you know, out of the, I spoke to them this morning. They were meeting at the FAPA. I went and I spoke to them, and they passed a resolution calling on the Congress in the Philippine Islands to put a ban on American grains.
Good, just like Hawaii did.
Just like Hawaii did, yeah.
Right.
Filipino consul interference. October 7, 65, great strikers picket the Philippine consul in Los Angeles. October 8, 65, Hagen asks suspension of controversial fund.
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of fun with that one. I didn't want the money when the strike started, you know, because I knew it would be just a hindrance. But I thought that I would, wouldn't say that. I would just hang tight, you know, and
test
them, you know, and use that as a diversionary tactic.
Yeah.
Which we did very successfully, you know. We hadn't hung up on that, you know, for a long while we were doing our work, you know.
Yeah.
Every time they began to attack us, we talk about...
Grant.
The grant, you know, getting that money so we could win the strike.
Yeah.
in the meetings, and we and so the, their spies would go back and tell them.
Yeah.
They get really upset and they begin to focus on the grant, you know. So the grant was worth more than $274,000.
October 8, 65, ranch guard is jailed in great strike shooting against Arnold R. Baxter. Accused of firing a shotgun over the head of Doug Adair.
Doug Adair and Chala.
Who's Chala?
Chala is a little girl that used to be in the strike. She's married now.
Oh, I see.
And Dolores, I think, and other people were driving back with Doug Adair, you know, from the picket line. And the car was heating up, so Doug stopped by a ranch house. And he went into the yard to get water, you know, because it was hot. And the guy got a gun, you know, and fired a shot over his head. Because he knew we were pickets, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. At the Jamara Ranch. October 8, 65, ranch guard is jailed in grape strike shooting against Arnold R. Baxter, accused of firing a shotgun over the head of Doug Adair at the Jamara Ranch.
What's that?
October 9, 65, dispute is certified at Vineyard. That's a Jamara Vineyard.
Yeah, that's, we went and they were picking gondola.
Mm.
And we went there and put up a picket line for me to call them. And then one guy came and turned out to be one of the Puerto Rican members of the union in Bakersfield. And we recognized him. I said, what are you doing there? So we know there's a strike. Yeah, there's a big strike all over here, this place. He says, well,
did you bring the towel back?
Roy had
him. Oh, okay.
And he said, I said, well, there's a lot of members there in France. I can go get them out. No, she said, he said, well, the hell, I was just going to get my lunch bill. Can you give me a ride to Bakersfield? And I said, sure. And then I said, wait a minute. I said, anybody else in there? You know, oh, sure, we have two or three more members in there. Sign up people who had signed up, you know, for not paying dues, but sign up for the union.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what are you waiting for? Get them all out. And I said, look, I called him back and I said, look, go to them. They were picking towards us. And tell them to just pick. And then when they get to the end, then
keep going,
you know. And the TV cameras were there that day. And we had five occasions where TV cameras came and they went out and we got them by the hundreds.
Yeah.
And that we had a scoreboard up in the other office,
yeah.
And with my people say, well, we got 60, we got 150, we got 30, we got 12, you know, and make the totals every day. We're getting by the hundreds, you know,
yeah.
And they were coming, tumbling, you know. We must have gone through 10,000 people that first year, you know. People would come, always a strike, and they would leave, you know. They were being recruited, and as fast as we could get them out, you know. And
that
the
hardcore
was forming, you know.
Right.
I'm sorry, that's at Pagliarulo. Oh yeah, but they also found that there's evidence, new evidence, that shows employees left their jobs at Jamara Vineyards at Edison as a result of the new finding the state stopped referring workers to the farm.
Yeah, the one in Pagliarulo, people had left in Pagliarulo, but the state was dragging its feet, you know, so we got more people to leave. We sent for the organizers, Gilbert and the people in early morning, we got them to take more people out. That's how we got it certified.
October 12, 65, any poverty aid declares NFWA grant will stand.
That was in Stockton. Oh, they really hated
it. October 12, 65, man is attacked. Two arrested in Delano strike disturbance at the Bruno DeSpoto coal storage plant. Bert Dellarmenti was arrested when officers saw him strike rancher Charles DeSpoto in front of the storage plant. Robert Plancer arrested on a warrant charging disturbance of the peace at the M. Caratan coal storage plant. October 1365, picket reports rifle threat by ranch foreman. Carlos Repullo Hernandez, threatened by Mr. and Mrs. Jill Ramirez.
Is Jill Ramirez threatening?
October 1465, court's order limits to Larry Ranch picketing.
That's one of those injunctions, limiting the number of pickets.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're now beginning to feel the brunt of the picket, of the injunction.
Yeah.
Very bad. Where they're clamping down on
the judiciary is coming up.
We're beginning to feel the pressure of not being able to do,
Yeah, freedom of movement.
Yeah.
Ranch.
All this time the cops are...
Lock issued the order. October 15th, pickets ignore court order, setting a number.
It wasn't a plan to ignore it. It was mass confusion, We didn't know what the range... what happened was Dolores, I think, was picketing out there in Gilbert, and we didn't know that Lucas owned that other ranch, Apparently it was a new property. We weren't aware of it,
I see.
And because he'd been acquiring property for the last 5 or 6 years. And so we were picketing, and I think that was a defense,
October 1865, picket filed battery charge against Early Mart Grower. That was Gene Nelson.
Okay.
The grower was George Dulcich.
Oh, yeah.
Who was accused of grabbing and choking him. October 1865, picket filed battery charge. That's the same one. October 1965, 8 pickets are arrested on trespass charge. That's when Dolores Huerta. Fernando de la Cruz, Rodney Freeland, Jose Medina, El Pedillo Martinez, Mary Murphy Gonzala, Salala.
That's Chala. Gonzala,
so forth.
What happened was that they were, scouting. And they were in about 3 or 4 cars, and there was this street that they didn't know this was a this was a private road because it continued.
Look what I got.
And we drove in there.
The ones wouldn't fit you.
Oh, those are the ones?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Well,
Franciscan
now.
The ones, you're going to talk to Father Day about mine?
Yeah, I told him that.
Tell me, I want a heavier soul than mine.
Oh, than this?
Let me see.
Well, I told him not to make him heavy as his, because
where were we? Oh, yeah. And so Dolores drove right ahead, There was a setup. There was a pickup, and so they trapped him in, and then they called the police with the radios, and they caught
him. Yeah, yeah.
They were trapped. The girls got a lot of pleasure out of it.
Mm.
We got a lot of mileage, a lot of propaganda mileage out of it.
Already had a jury trial coming up in Pixley for trespassing.
That one in Pixley, when she went to court, not the one on the cars, but by herself, she went into just in about 50 feet to a worker wanted a leaflet,
mm-hmm.
and he said, give me one, so she just walked in to give it to him,
That was it.
And she was caught.
Yeah.
And we heard about that. They went to court, and Alex Hoffman went to defend her, we talked to the judge beforehand, and he wouldn't drop the charge, anyway. So they had 11 Anglos in the jury and one Mexican-American lady from Early Mart. And the jury went out for maybe about 45 minutes, and they came back and they all said, and I saw this Mexican-American lady and I said, she's the only one there. There were, I think there was one or two growers' wives there. But at any rate, there were people who were not friendly to us. You could see that, that. So anyway, the judge said, well, do you have your decision? And the jury from the government said, Your Honor, we find the accused, guilty. And then this lady started crying. And this juror, you know.
The Mexican lady?
Yes. And she got up and said, Your Honor, they didn't. Unanimously. This is not unanimous. I said she wasn't guilty. They made me say it was, but I know she's not guilty. And I want you to know that because they forced me inside to say she was guilty.
Right.
And just look, and his face just grew like this, you know, just you could see the veins and the muscles in his face. You know?
Yeah.
You got the guy and said, case dismissed. And stumped out of the court. And when she came, I hugged the lady. I don't know who she was, you know.
Yeah.
I said, you have a lot of courage. She said, they're not going to push me around. You know, and went on to say, it was very good. And we want to congratulate Dolores and Alex says, I don't even think that lady did it. She said, you know, there was no evidence. And they convicted her because she was a Mexican. If she had been guilty, I would have reported guilty, but she wasn't guilty. They couldn't prove it to me. But she wanted to get more evidence, and they said, oh, no, you don't live in a hair, you better go back to work, you know. You know?
They didn't work it right.
Rich Grove also had a hearing coming up for assault with a deadly weapon earlier when he allegedly ran down three men November 29th, his car. October 20th, 65, 34 Valley pickets refused bail to test free speech. That's another Ron Taylor story. They were yelling on Vineyard picket lines. Art Meyer was arrested, among many others.
Yeah. That's a big arrest. Let me see.
The family's 44, huh?
Church people.
Most of the ministers bailed themselves out, but the workers were kept there, you know.
Yeah, that was a setup, wasn't it?
Yeah. We wanted to test the hope. I'm always sick and tired of being pushed around, you know, and it was so crass, you know. And all the legal advice pointed to the fact that all the lawyers and Alex especially and the ones he was consulting with were saying, you know, they can't do that. That's the story I tell you about the sheriff's deputy calling me into his building, into his office, to tell me not to use the word welder.
Oh, yeah.
Not to shout, you know, and all that.
Yeah,
all those three-step things.
Yeah.
That's part of it. That's the end of that. But a night before, I called in some of the women, you know, we picked them. And I called them and I said, we need some laundry to go to jail. Women, you know, and I wasn't sure, you know, how committed they were at that point. This is October 20th. I always thought it was October 12th, but anyway, it's October 20th. And it was a very hush-hush meeting, and we just, you know, in fact, we met him back at his house, right here.
Oh, yeah?
Earlier in the day, you know. And I met with a big group, and I said that we were going to have, and I said, we want you and you and you run around, you know. I saw what health was, and they had sick kids, you know, and things that I could tell, you know, that they couldn't go away for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I asked him, was there any reason why they couldn't be away for two, three, or four days? And the one that said, no, there's no reason I can go. I said, well, I want to see you. And then they thought I was going to send them to a
retreat or something.
Maybe to pick it out of town or something.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Anyway, we told them what it was, you know. It was planned very secretly. And then we just went out and started shouting. And see, the plan was not to have Chris arrested. But Chris was seeing, you know. And the cop was so damn mad, you know. He didn't care who it was. He just took care because we were challenging him. It wasn't the law. We were challenging him directly, personally,
you know. He was talking, according to Ron Taylor, he was talking to Ron.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was over there at the side of the road, apart from the rest of them, talking to Ron.
Mm-hmm.
And they forced him to go.
Chris, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
By rights, they should have picked up Ron, too, if they picked him up, because he wasn't part of that operation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when he did that, you know, I said, we've got this cop, you know, we got him in our bag. And sure, soon after that, he was removed. He was very anti strike. And I'm sure he was anti-Mexican, anti-everything.
Yeah.
And he lost a lot of points. He was so caught up in it was a personal thing with him, you know.
Yeah.
Especially with students, he used to bug me. And, oh, he used to get mad in hell. And you know, we beat him in all his department. And when Bobby Kennedy came and told the sheriff, you know, that was the case he was referring to.
Yeah, I know. And the sheriff claimed that he prevented by making that arrest, he prevented the those workers in the field from cutting the hearts out of the pickets.
Yeah. And so Kennedy was so smart, he said, so what you're telling me is that you arrested them because somebody else was going to commit a crime against them, and you arrested them to prevent that crime. He said, yes. So I see. I'd like to ask you in the meantime, during this lunch break, to go back and read the Constitution. Yeah.
Prayer just said at jail for the strikers.
One minute, sir.
Okay.
Come in.
Well, they were arrested, you know, and Jim brought up the idea that we should have a prayer vigil.
Mm-hmm.
So we took the people out there and went over to the back entrance of the jail.
Mm-hmm.
And conducted the service. And Jim read from the Beatitude?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blessed are they who are so.
The meek, you know.
Yeah.
So he read that in, uh-huh. You know, really uh-huh. Appropriate for New York City.
Yeah.
And we didn't have priests here then, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we sang. We took all the kids, the mothers and their husbands, you know, and we had a very large group.
Mm-hmm.
We did it till about noon to about midnight,
mm-hmm.
And we came back.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
October 22nd, 65, Chief Rapp's bias charge in strike enforcement. That's Chief of Police James Isles. So there's no foundation that there's bias. And Phil Soto would charge there was bias by the police.
Phil Soto came here, he was an assemblyman then.
Yeah.
And he saw what was happening. The cops were on our neck, you know, and every time we moved, we'd travel in the lane, they would follow us. It must have cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars to do what they were doing. And he was traveling in a car by himself, you know, and we let him a little Volkswagen.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran out of gas and left it out there in the field and started walking.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time he got back to it, someone had come by and overturned the car.
Oh.
And then he saw the police here in front of the office, you know.
Yeah.
With the radios and the cameras and, you know, taking these. So we charged, you know, that's the first, you know, charge that...
the bias.
The bias, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that in my first tour, you know, out of Delano.
Uh-huh.
He said very strongly, very directly. And very appealing to the audience.
Bias.
Well, I was telling him exactly what the police was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
23rd, 65. Lynch. No current police power abuse. Attorney General Lynch.
He made an investigation from his desk in Sacramento.
Yeah.
See, this is something politicians are less and less able to get away with now, you know. And as time, you know,
yeah.
goes on, they'll be able less to do that. That was very laid back.
So obvious.
Huh?
It was so obvious.
Obvious, you know.
Yeah. Did you put any pressure on him?
Well, no. We didn't consider it to be that.
No.
I have open air masses planned for farm labor.
Huh? Is it?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're going to do it in the front, huh?
He's the one who brought up the idea of speaking to them.
From up above?
Yeah, he had a plane called El Macho.
Oh.
And he said, we can do that. And I said, how could we? Don't have a very powerful PA system. And my plane has a cutaway or a cutoff, whatever, you know, a hole to fit a camera. He said, but I can, we can fit it right through there.
Right.
And so I said, oh, let's do it. So, okay, next week. The following he came and brought Father
Megan,
yeah. And we went out, and he and the both priests were in the front seat, and I was in the back, you know, with the equipment. And we put the PA system in a hold, you know, and then we couldn't bolt it on the floor, you know. And so then we took ropes, you know, or string, and we try to pull it down by attaching it to the seats and
yeah.
different things, you know.
Yeah.
But the air was very powerful, so it was floating sort of. It was a lot of air coming through.
Yeah.
And
what were you telling the workers?
Well, first we went and we took we assessed the whole area, you know, flying
yeah.
rather high, about 1,500 feet, maybe 1,000 feet. About 1,500 feet. And I saw, you know, many small crews. They were having a heck of a time there. So then I told them, why don't we made a pattern so we could go and come. As we went up, you know, we would pick it. In other words, pick it by air, you know. And then we make a big turn, and we come back, and we get all the crews so that everybody could see. And I was just telling them, you know, this is the union. This is the union. And
it was God.
Yeah. And saying that everything had, everyone had, was leaving the field. And that they were the only ones left. And it began to happen. They began to leave, they began to get in the cars and go.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Right? You could see
him. Right there, I could see him, you know. So then, and some people would sort of,
yeah.
didn't know where to go or come, so we
yeah.
then we after we went, we stayed about 3 hours, you know. By the time we were through, everybody had left. Everybody, there was not a one crew left in that.
Jeez.
We got everybody out.
Yeah.
And all the poison clothes were blue, they were steaming.
Well, but the cops know. Go ahead.
No, I did.
The guards were so mad, you know, and I was appealing to them, you know, to that the sooner they left, the sooner the struggle would be over, and that, you know, that they were brothers and all the things. But we began to do this when we began to see crews begin to disintegrate, then we began to concentrate on those crews, you know.
Sure.
And we just flew a pattern around it.
Well,
I didn't know, there were other things connected with it that I wasn't aware of then. The immigration also uses a plane.
Yeah.
And maybe they were afraid of that, you know, but no, I think mostly it was a sort of a reaction to a new thing.
Yeah.
They reacted very favorably. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we came back, we landed in Delano. And we landed there, there were about 20 growers there, cheering committee. And I told Father King, oh, the cheering leaders are, the cheering committee is waiting for us. Got off the plane, and Jack Fenner was so upset, and he said, he looked at me, you know, and got right close to me, right close to my face, and he said, "You think you're big shit because you got the Pope with you today." It's like that.
Yeah, yeah. And had so, the priest spoken to the people too, or just you?
Yeah, no, the priest did
too. Oh, they did too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially Father Kenny, who could speak Spanish. And,
yeah.
But I did most of the talking.
Yeah.
He did most of the firing.
Yeah.
And then there was a question of how high he was flying, so he said, you know, "I'm going to get in trouble about the height, but I want you to see look at that altimeter."
Yeah.
And he said it, the land was above sea level, so he said it at sea level, which would mean that he was higher than what they'd show, you know, when he was up there, because the land was higher. You know?
Yeah, sure.
And then on top of that, he never came down, as I remember, the furthest down he came, the lowest he came on the altimeter, allowing for that was about 800 feet.
Oh yeah,
500 feet is the rule.
I see.
So we were always well over 800 feet.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, there was a lot of complaints, and you almost lost his license.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, it was a big complaint, investigation. But anyway,
were there cops out there too?
There were cops out there who began to look at us, you know.
Yeah.
And then we also saw a picket line. Of course, the picket line was then wild. You know, we buzzed the picket line. Not really buzzing, but we'd come by and we shout, "We want a huelga," you know.
Yeah,
And so they were.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was the easiest way of picketing. You can see everything, and you could. You could cover everybody. That's the most effective way of picketing.
What I meant was, were the cops waiting for you when you got out of the plane?
Oh, no. What happens is very interesting. When we got out of the plane, the growers were there, and Father Kenny, I don't remember exactly what it was, but Father Kenny let him have it right back, knowing he'd say he was a poor man.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very direct to them. He told him something about, "I'm a priest, but I'm a man, you know, I'm a priest, but I'm still a man," something to that effect, you know.
Yeah.
And they were sort of taken aback by his real strong reaction, real strong, you know, stand. So we walked, you know, out of there, and we got our stuff, and there was a car waiting for him, brought us to the office, and then we left some of our strikers over there in the plane to guard the plane, just in case, and we came back, and I took him over to the house, and we ate, and then he went back to the plane. I came back to the office, and then next day, a few hours later, was something in the radio about growers were getting, seeking to get us arrested, you know. Well, as I later find out, the following day, a warrant was issued for my arrest. But as I heard it, and now this is only hearsay, and I don't even remember how it came about, may be true, may not be true, they had that warrant. It took them about almost 2 weeks to arrest me. It was in Tulare County.
Oh, yeah.
But see, what happened was, I heard that the Delano police wouldn't arrest me then. I had been hitting him pretty hard, you know, on my speaking engagement.
The bias deal.
The bias deal, and they wouldn't arrest me.
I see.
And they told the Kern County Sheriff's Office, "If you want him, you can go after him, you can get him, but we're not going to do it." So, to this day, I feel I was tricked, you know, to being arrested. And I'll tell you what happened. It was on a Sunday, and it was about 10 o'clock, and I was sitting in my office. And namely Randy and Tavo came first, and he said, "Cesar, there's a labor contractor over there at the corner of I think it's 152. I think it's 152 and County Line Road on the Tulare side. They were picking, I think it was a Marriott there. They were picking, no, a hospital bed, they call it. A very large, very tall line. It has a amber, what do you call it? It's like a shape way up high, you know. But
oh, like an arbor?
An arbor. And they were picking there on a Sunday. He's gonna go on that way now. You can leave the mic here. And
yeah.
So I told Tavo. Immediately, I was suspicious, you know. No, I'm generally I'm not, you know, but. The labor contractor is saying that if he comes over here, I will, you know, leave the field.
I think I ought to have that over here, Caesar, because you're turning away from it and you might not get it.
No, it'll pick it up.
Will it?
Yeah.
Even when you turn this way?
Yeah.
We're like trying to close the door. That's all right. Go ahead.
So anyway, I told Tawa, I said, this smells, you know. He said, no, he said, he'll come. I said, why don't you go and ask him to come to the office, you know. And he went, and then here comes Lenny, Randy, and Tawa back, and they said, both of them were very convinced that they would get the people out of here, throwing them. And I remember telling him, okay. I said, but I still think it's a trap, you know. There's something that told me there was. So, see, well, you're busy and you never look back, but and I never made much of an issue because it was something that I made a pledge, you know, that I was, it was me personally, I wouldn't make an issue, so I wouldn't take the the focus out of the real issue, you know.
Yeah.
But I went there and he came out, and he was very nervous, he was shaking, you know. And I remember telling him, you know, asking if he was tired, he said, no, and I said, why are you shaking? And I said, we're friendly, you know, we're not anymore. And he came, and then I just remember, you know, he took his head off, kind of, he took his head off in a
exaggerated gesture?
Kind of, you know, he did something unusual, something you wouldn't expect to do with a hat, you know. And the pickup, the guy in the pickup, and then with a pickup about five cars back, he took off. I originally wanted to call the police because the church came back in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And a Mexican-American came, Kevin M. Pena. He said, I have an arrest warrant for you. You want to read it? I said, I don't want you to read it. Save it, you know. Let's go. And I got in the car. And they took me to Porterville.
Yeah.
And in the car, you know, he wanted to talk, you know. I didn't want to talk to him. I was too busy, you know, planning on what to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I was, you know, always half, half asleep, you know, like asleep. So I took the opportunity to take a nap, you know. So I napped until we got there, and he woke me up. We got in, and then they booked me and put me in the cell. And I was there about a couple of hours. Oh yeah, they wouldn't give me anything to read, you know. I asked him for a Bible for something. For something to read, you know, and then he could do it. It was Sunday, you know.
Yeah.
So I went to bed and I said, well, I better get tucked in my sleep. So I went to sleep for a while. And then I was woken up by the copying, because you're being bailed out. And I said, oh no, you know, I didn't have a chance to talk to anybody, you know, I didn't want to be bailed, you know, I wanted to stay there and go to court, and, you know.
Yeah.
And see, all the time I was thinking, I hope they know how to play the ball outside, you know.
Yeah.
But apparently they got a little, and there was a big committee to go get me, and
yeah.
and some people had come from the East Coast, some friends, and the bail was $100, $160, and this guy pulled out two $100 bills, you know, and put them over the counter. That's a lot of money. You may never get it back. I don't care. It was just, you know.
Were they from the union?
No, they were from management.
No.
But they were pretty friendly. Some company, but. And one of them still comes by once in a while. Anyway, I was, you know, bailed out. I was home that evening. Back at the office, you know.
Yeah.
Cracking the whip. But I think that's my version of what happened. And I didn't make much of it because, you know, it's not important. But it was a good lesson, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing that struck me was that I predicted the plane to happen. I had a premonition, you know,
yeah.
It happened.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't have to have too much of it.
Yeah. What grower was that that...
They were working with, I think, I'm not sure, but I think it was Shandy that they were working with.
No, I mean the ones that,
that
preferred the charge against
charge.
You. Bobby Rulo or...
I think it was this photo. I really don't know, but I forgot.
Yeah.
Did I sit there? No, that went. That's a good massage.
¿Está usando usted?
No le.
Bueno, yo quería preguntar usted tiene más conocimientos. ¿Dónde están?
By Cesar Chavez. October 28, 65. Kegel asks U.S. review of Delano, France. October 28, 65. Minister declares fact-facing brought tie
Bill?
With farm strike.
No. At that point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what was that last... I lost that last point.
It is November 2nd, 65. CSO opposes new issues in grape strike. It opposes civil rights issues introduced in the controversy.
Yeah, yeah. You have to move that button, don't you?
Yeah.
The wheel. Yeah.
I with farm strike. That was
Hartmeyer
explaining his more active role is based on deep commitment to social.
Yeah.
Well, that's a gold mine, that tape.
Yeah.
We ought to put it in...
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then just sign what piece?
Yeah.
Okay. Cesar, you know, not tonight, I guess, but tomorrow or something. The correspondence is really piling up. I mean, it's already been signed.
Okay.
To read to you.
Okay.
Big stack of it.
Okay.
And there's a lot of checks that Richard brought in 2 days ago.
Okay.
And something that really needs you to sign, and Grace Vallejo needs you to send me anything signed. All this has been around for over a day.
Okay.
Maybe tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning?
Yeah. Unless you need to see
that. Tonight,
you know. Well, tonight, you know, unless Greg...
October 23rd, 65.
It's not really that long. It's going to take about an hour. I don't know. Won't take that long to read them.
Abuse.
Maybe about a half an hour.
Okay. When you put it together,
it's
not
okay. Yeah, it's together. It's in a file that says signature.
At
5
o'clock. Reverend.
How do you feel?
Okay, I feel pretty good.
I was saying, but after that, you're ready to go to sleep, huh?
Was it good? Kitty left, was it half an hour?
Just about, yeah, about 25 minutes.
He, it takes him longer to do it, you know. And I kind of wanted a longer, especially on my back. He doesn't have time to do my back while I'm
because he's... Well, then what I got to do is just go to the
jail for the strikers.
Well, I don't like my legs do, but, you know, in the back...
Well, 45 minutes is too long, Caesar. You're just getting too tired. I'm just like swimming. You might feel like you want to swim.
That's the chief of police, James Stiles. There's no foundation that there's bias.
I mean, we didn't do all the exercises. But we would cut out the ones that weren't helping you.
October 23rd, 65. Lynch.
But you wanted to go 45 minutes?
No. You're accompanied in two flights by Cesar Chavez. October 28, 65, Kegel asks U.S. review of Delano Grant.
That's the one we're still getting.
October 28, 65, minister declares fact-facing brought tie with farm strike.
Fact-facing?
That was Hartmeyer explaining.
Oh,
it is more
that was it.
Role is based on deep commitment to social justice.
Yeah, that was the thing that he made that.
The role of the church is to help farm workers organize for
By this time, there's a lot of heat building on the migrant ministry, you know.
Yeah.
And I get some uncertainty in some quarters, so Chris decided to... he wasn't hiding anything, but decided to really just go out and tell as it was, you know. And he did a beautiful job.
He did.
Yeah, I forgot where... I think it was in Fresno or...
Yeah.
Or Visalia, it was in Fresno.
Yeah, I think so.
It was... I wasn't there, but I think it was masterful.
Yeah.
He just talked about, you know, the commitment to, and that the church was where the people were. Oh, that's what he said. He said, no, Christ is the church, and the church is where the people are. And that's where Christ is.
Yeah.
And then he talked about the church role in bringing about justice. And that's pretty good
thing.
Yeah. It's November 2nd, 65. CSO opposes new issues in grape strike. It opposes civil rights issues introduced in the controversy.
Okay. It was comical, you know. It wasn't really something that hurted our efforts. Well, of course, if it hadn't happened, it would have been better. But it was comical to me, you know. But to some of the people, it wasn't. It was it meant quite a bit, you know, on the strike, you know. So. I was letting it just fluff off. I didn't, you know, I wasn't responding to them.
Yeah.
But I felt that I began to see the members who began to react to it and ask me, well, what, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, well, okay, let's make haste, you know, let's take them on. So we went to, see, I was strapped. I think one of the reasons I didn't want to take them on, you know, was I didn't know how to take Delano on without, because the person goes throughout the valley,
yeah,
without making it, without confusing people that I was taking this whole CSO on.
Right.
See? It was very difficult to do, and I had to hold back, you know, and when I struck back, we struck back at individuals within the group, but not, I never said the, well, maybe I did in some cases, but in most cases I didn't, you know, said the CSO, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In those cases I did, I was making sure to say the CSO in Delano and Rich Grove only, you know, but all the other CSOs are good. But that, you know, I was sure that wasn't going to be printed in the newspaper that about this thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I elected not to do it that way.
How do you like your meat cooked?
Medium.
Okay.
Hey, am I going to get some meat? With this
little
vegetarian
bit, not
here?
Not much.
Needed meat.
Just enough to keep you alive, right? All right.
And so anyway, that was the quandary, you know, that I found myself in. And then, one and two, that wasn't that important. They didn't have any power. They were, you know,
yeah,
it was a peripheral group. I felt that I could spend my time and our efforts better than somewhere else, you know.
Sure.
But, see, there again, you know, in a way, it's sort of a reverse of what I've always said, you know, is that sometimes leadership, you know, begins to take things. Well, we have a good case in the strike. If I wanted to to take my jailing and some of the things very personally, you know. And you make a big case out of my jailing and the things. And then you sort of diffuse the real issue.
Right.
And so I said, you know, I never want to do that because the real issue is the strike, you know, and all everything else is, you know, just complements it.
Yeah.
And anything I say, you know, when it becomes a personal thing, well, that jailing, you know, gave me a lot of opportunities, you know. But I knew what I wanted to do, and so I kept it as quiet as I could. I didn't really talk about it. And if I did, you know, just to say that they were wrong, and, you know, but keep it in the low key.
Yeah.
So that's where we began to make the plans to go to later on in November in Fresno. A lot of people were surprised when we were still out there.
Well, why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
We left here about 6 o'clock in the morning, and we took... there were a lot more than 60. It must have been about 100 or over 100. And that was only a part of the strikers, you know. And I had a shape-up meeting here in the morning behind the hiring hall, and I explained to them what we were doing and so forth. And they were gone. Well, they didn't care. So we went, and we elected... I didn't want to speak, you know, on the issue because, well, I had a lot of friends in CSO, and... I wanted them to hear from the workers, so we elected two representatives to you know, speak for the group.
Yeah.
And I wanted the workers, so we elected Camacho and Tony Mendez. We went, you know, so when we got there before, we found a place and we got there before anybody else came, you know.
The front row seats.
Yeah, we're inside. We're blocking the alleyway and the elevator, the passageway and everything. And boy, when the people came, they were surprised. But no one was as surprised as Mildred Serrano.
Okay.
And something that happened there at that meeting, you know, as a result of which, it's a terrible mistake that she made, you know. But I'll tell you about that if you remind me later.
Yeah.
But it started that day. So then, well, it was going to start at 9, and actually it started about till almost 11. And our guys were hungry. They wanted to leave, you know, to move. And so I didn't have any money to buy any food. But as more people came, you know, they began to, we were there like sitting bull, you know, just, you know, waiting for them. And most of the people in CISO were pretty friendly, you know.
Was this at the Hacienda?
No, this was at the, at Hart's cafeteria upstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
So the meeting started, and then they went to their business, and they were, you know, finally then they got to us. Very soon, you know, they did. And so Tony took him on. And it was a big battle, you know.
Tony who?
Tony Rios.
Oh.
Took the CSO opposition on for us.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Did a beautiful job, you know.
Yeah.
You know how to do it.
Yeah.
And then Camacho got up and just spoke to the, you know, how he'd been a CSO member and how... CISO had never wanted to organize. He was brief, well, and I wanted to organize workers. Now, somebody was trying to do it. Why wouldn't they let us do it, you know? It was sort of a pleading thing. It wasn't harsh or hard attacking or anything. And I hope that the own CISO was there in mass, you know. And they popped up, and boy, our guys just got up and shoot them up. You know, they got up and...
Espinoza and Gunnia.
Yeah. Boy, they couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
They got up and they took him on. I think it was Petra or Teddy.
Yeah.
Anyway, and there were other people and other women that got up and took him on right there. They were strikers, they weren't members, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was taken, and then the vast majority voted for it. But there were some that didn't vote, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And some that voted against it. But those that didn't vote were the one I know that I'd never forget, that they didn't vote, you know, for the treasurer, what's his name, from...
Gilroy.
From Gilroy?
Yeah.
He didn't vote.
Villasano.
Villasano, yeah. He didn't vote, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, Al and the Rich
Grove...
Espinosa and the Rich Grove contingent and all the other labor contractors that were with them, you know. Well, they were all labor contractors.
Yeah.
Voted against it. And we got the nod, you know. So Camacho got up and thanked them, and then Tony said something nice, and then they were trying to get me to talk, you know, I wouldn't, I didn't want to talk. I wanted the workers to do it.
Yeah.
And then we got up, you know, and reminded me pretty much of the Zapata meeting, you know, in the movie, you know.
Yeah.
We go see the president.
Yeah.
We got, you know, we were very quiet, and it's just, this is what we want. You know, we got it. We walked out, you know.
Yeah.
Thanked him and walked out. Came home. That was it. It was,
And what was it that Mildred did?
Oh. See, after the meeting, someone went and put some posters inside the CSO office there by the theater.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
second?
I think the posters were had to do with a strike. I don't know, there were picket signs or something. And she claimed that I had put them under the door, you know, and began to you know, hate me for it.
Yeah.
But I know she was very cold and wouldn't talk to me. But I didn't know why, you know.
Yeah.
Because she's a lot like Barraza, you know,
sure.
Who was so against me, and he was helping us in ministry. I know I did something wrong, but I don't know why, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of those things, you know.
Yeah.
So finally, Gilbert, it was Gilbert Flores that I asked him to talk to Mildred and find out why I, you know,
yeah.
What is this big crime that I committed, so I can. Repent, you know.
Yeah.
So he told me that, so I went to Fresno for something else, and I stopped by, and I said, you have to understand one thing. I said, I don't have to do that in CSO. I said, my part of my life is what's left here. I said, that's part of my organization, whether I pay dues, or he said, you can take me away from CSO, but you can take the CSO away from me, but you can't take me away from the CSO. That's part of me. And I said, and you have to understand that. And I said, I don't give a damn what you think. That's part of me. I left a quarter of my life in there.
Yeah.
I said, and I gave you everything I had and more. At the expense and sacrifice of all my family, everything came last and CSO came first. And I said, what makes you think I would be doing a thing like that? And I said, you're wrong, and I'm ashamed, you know, that you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not apologizing. I didn't even put the signs there. And if you want to believe it, fine. If you don't, I don't care. But, you know, you have to remember this, that you're wrong. And I said another thing. If I wanted it, I would do it when you were here. If I wanted to put picket signs, I wouldn't have to wait until the office was closed. I would come right now, and I would bring the picket signs and I would give them to you. So she started up. She sort of had apologized, and she was very nice to me, you know, before, you know, I
yeah.
was staying in her home,
that's
you know,
right.
and they used to feed me, and I appreciate all of that, you know,
yeah.
but this was a different matter, it was a matter of her being completely wrong, and
yeah.
and having no reason to feel that way, because I had never lied to them or do anything, you know, dishonest, and what bothered me was, why did they get the idea that I would do a thing like this? You know, undoubtedly somebody from the strike went by and did that.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't do it, and I didn't have it done either. You know, I didn't order anyone, so. And I did tell her, I said, undoubtedly someone from the strike. It happened, they were here, so someone came down, and because I think they voted either against it or they didn't vote. But they weren't with us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Their vote was not with us. So I think, undoubtedly somebody from the strike went, maybe, you know. But it wasn't sent by us. So anyway, we got that...
Yeah.
November 3rd, 65, Delano picketed as viewed by ministers. Frederick Reinheimer, Episcopal Church, Rabbi Stephen Forstein, Temple Beth Hillel, Richmond. November 4th, 65, Rancher files complaint on strike action.
Yeah. This was one of the first, not the first, but one of the first publicized groups, you know. It was an organized group that came. We asked them to come. And we're now beginning to learn, you know, about the great need of public relations work outside. And they came, and I'll never forget, Reinheimer was from San Jose, I believe. And I was always... In the beginning, you know, we didn't know where he stood, but he was very good. He was the minister, but also a I think he's a minister, but also an attorney, you know. Or an attorney who was a layman, you know.
Yeah.
And trying to be very good. He offered his services to help us with little matters, you know, and a very good man.
Well, Richmond, November 4th,
and I talked to the rabbi, who was a very young guy, just from Richmond, just out of the seminary, as they call it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told him that we knew very little about Judaism here, you know, and most of the stuff we know is misconceptions, and that I thought it would be well worth their while to let our people know as soon as possible what it was all about, you know. I said it's good that they know these things because all they know is that the worn out story about Jews. And I said, and it's time, it's open, the leadership is willing, and the membership will receive it. And I said, and I think, you know, we can make a lot of, educate an awful lot of people. So we kept that correspondence going back and forth, and, you know, I kept saying, well, I want them to come, but it has to be it has to be done in a special way.
Yeah.
Because, you see, here, the Catholics, most of them never seen a rabbi or
right.
a Jew, you know. And so it had, I was sure it'd be receptive, you know, but it had to be done in a special way. So
it'd be more meaningful.
It had to have something, you know, connected to it.
Right.
So we found that, you know, a few months later when we marched to Sacramento.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We just over about 2 days a couple of days out of Sacramento was Passover Day.
Yeah.
When we had the, he came and a group of rabbis came and we ate matzahs and...
Yeah.
Celebrated there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, you got to strike action at Bruno DeSoto, file a complaint charging Chavez with a violation of an injunction using his loudspeaker. November 5th, 65, War on Poverty Group in Stockton backs strikers. November 5th, 65,
yeah.
Tickets to sale, Senator's view on farm floor.
Okay. Are you getting enough?
Yeah.
November 5th, 65, tickets to sale, Senator's view on farm floor. Protesting Senator Murphy's stand on farm labor. Picket line in front of the Fresno Hacienda Motel.
Oh, yeah. Well, see,
that, we shall overcome.
That was
organized by SNCC. November 6,
60. Actually, it was former SNCC, of course, people who were here with us.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought it would be a lot better for those groups to be identified as doing it than the union. You know.
Right, yeah.
It would dig in deeper, you know. And also, it would, the identification would be made broader. I was, you know, I wanted to get the...
Yeah, well, just like you're having probably farmer... issue that statement from New York.
Yeah.
On behalf of the
yeah.
Board.
Yeah.
Opposed civil rights issue and strike. That's the CSO chapters again. Match. November 6, 1965.
Well,
Haynes urges attack.
Oh, you know, they were complaining about the injecting the civil rights issue into the strike.
Oh, yeah. I found it so amusing, you know, that they would be doing that when... you know, not too long before the strike started, we had a big fight, you know, to defend their leader.
That's right.
Because of the being fired because he was a Mexican American.
Sure.
And not only defending, but going all out, you know. Not only doing that, but having to divert our plans to come and organize the CSO chapter to use that
That's
as
right.
a shield and as a guard, you know,
yeah.
to keep... to get his job back and
right.
to get the people organized, remember?
Sure do.
And there's a good dicho in Spanish for that. Un bien con un mal se paga.
Yeah,
yeah. And that's very true there, you know.
Yeah. A good paid back badly.
Yeah, a good deed is paid back with a bad deed.
Yeah.
November 8, 65.
Chavez is arrested on Selena Brewer's strike-act charge. Warrant was issued by Judge Carter on a complaint of rancher Bruno Despoto.
Despoto.
November 8th.
Despicable Despoto.
Selena Brewer is cleared of labor charges. That was Caesar's charge against A. Caratana's son for hiring 60 Texas workers without informing them of the strike. November 9, 64.
I had forgotten about that one. No, that one, green cards, oh. they were, the charge was that they had brought them in to work at a certified strike without telling them that there was a strike in progress.
Yeah, yeah.
And we gave that to the Labor Commission. And just
nothing.
Yeah. Leader lists speaking dates. Caesar will speak at Bakersfield College.
I want to talk about that. That's, I never forget that one. Several weeks before, Jessica Govea and a group of about three or four people came and asked me to speak to the young Democrats at Bakersfield State, at Bakersfield Junior College. And I said, will there be a lot of people there? And they said, oh, yes, I'm sure we could fill the place up. And I didn't ask, but I, for some very strange reason, I assumed that there were a lot of Democrats in this group, you know, in this club.
Mm-hmm.
Later found out there were only about five or six. So maybe a few more. But anyway, they made all the arrangements, you know, and the girls came out in force, and they came out for bear, you know, ready for the kill. And there was this radio, this television commentator.
Does he figure later appear?
I think so.
Yeah.
Frank, he later was hired by them, I think.
Yeah.
Frank, whatever his name is. Anyway, he was there. And
Nelson talks about him in his book.
Very sick guy.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
His mother is a very good Democrat in the county. Anyway, so I got into the schedule started at 7 o'clock, so I got there about 6:30, and I looked around, and my God, there were all the growers and their sons and daughters and wives, and you know, just
yeah.
But good, luckily enough, there were a few Chicanos and a few Negroes, very few, but they were there, you know. And Marshall Gans had just talked to me, just joined one of the two, you know. So he knew Bakersfield. He was just going, you know how he is, organizing things and so forth. But we were outnumbered, you know. So I got up to the mic, you know, and the faculty had organized it, because they knew it was very hot. I didn't realize how hot it was going to be. They organized it in such a way that they would shield me. For instance, a question would be asked through a moderator, and the moderator would decide whether I should answer it or not. Then would give it to me.
With notes? Did they send notes up?
No.
Oh.
Questions from the floor.
Mm.
So, and I was going to speak, you know, for 45 minutes or so. So, when I got up, you know, and I faced up and said, why speak, you know? Let's take them on, you know.
Yeah.
So, I had prepared a talk, you know. As I had my notes here, I had to prepare a talk, but I see so many growers. And since they won't talk to us, maybe we can talk here. I said, you dish it out, and I'll answer it. And I said, don't hold back, because I'm not going to hold back. That was a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
Then the first question, a crippled guy got up, and he said, Mr. Chavez, you know, old guy, crippled with,
yeah.
He said, when was the last time you paid dues to the Communist Party? And I said about the last time you hit your wife.
Yeah.
You know, and there was some laughter, but most of boo. You know.
Yeah.
No, but oh no, take it back now. What he said was, when was the last time you paid your dues? You know. and then the professor. No, those questions are not, he was very firm, but very, you know,
yeah.
are not allowed here because then he cite the Constitution and, you know, I forgot what, some Supreme Court decisions. And I said, I said, I didn't come here to be shielded. I told him, you know, aloud, I said, I want them to ask me everything they've got, you know. I said, because I don't think they've got the guts to take me on. See, I was frightened, but I was, you know, showing the tripas corazón, you know. So I said, I don't think they got the guts to get up there and ask me some of the things that they're saying behind my back.
Yeah.
And this is kind of pretty mad, you know. So I stood there and I fended questions for an hour and 55 minutes.
Wow. They kept coming in.
I took everyone and I said, I said, I'm going to answer everyone. And I took them on, you know. And then after a little while, I got my composure and began to make fun of, you know. Took me a question, I answered, and I put a little stinger in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I said, well, gee, is everybody in Bakersfield against the strike? And then I said, I see a lot of other people, a lot of people who shouldn't be against the strike, just by the color of their skin, you know? And there were some Negroes there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they began to get up, but there were very few. So anyway, well, after about 20 minutes, you know, 50 minutes, they had nothing to do with it because the opposition was communism, you know.
Yeah.
And they wanted to go, I was a communist. I said, no, I'm not communist. And this is where I said there, you know, something that, it just came off, you know. I hadn't studied, I didn't know how to answer it, you know. But I said, I said, I'm not a communist. I said, but I'm not apologizing for it either. I'm just speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if what we're doing is communism, then we're communists. I said, not by design, but just by accident. But let me tell you a little bit about that. And I said, all of you, including you, sir, who asked the question, undoubtedly, you are a Christian. Undoubtedly, you are a Christian. Are you not? And he sort of, and I says, well, tell me whether you're not. I'm just asking, I need to know so I can answer your question. And he said, so you are one. I said, who in the hell, and so I use the word, who in the hell told you that the communists had the monopoly, that's right, the monopoly on concern for people. And I turned around, you know.
Yeah.
He said, you trying to tell me that anybody who's interested in people is a communist? I said, well, you're trying to say that? Maybe it's true, you know. But I said, what I'm trying to say is that there are some Christian principles, you know, that dictate that one should be concerned about his fellow men. And I said, so when you say that, you're really saying, you're doing the greatest disservice you can ever think. You're saying that Christians
don't care.
That's what you're saying, right? And there was some laughter and a lot of boos, but a few applauses, you know.
Yeah.
And the guy couldn't answer, you know. I said, well, let me tell you, there's some Christians that are concerned for human beings. And there are some Christians out there on the picket line, they're going to picket day and night. If it takes 30 years to win the strike, and we're going to win it. And you better know that right now. This is the kind of, you know, I took them on very strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other question was, there were, I think, three tough questions. You know, the other question was, what about the poor farmer? What about if you break him? And I said, with the declaration of the strike, we have ended the subsidizing the existence of small growers or big growers or middle or medium-sized growers with cheap labor. I said, a businessman in the community, outside of agriculture, if he's going to stay in business, he's got to be able to cut it as a businessman and face the competition. Now in agriculture, you're trying to tell me that we have to
set up different guidelines.
Yeah, to different guidelines and subsidize with cheap labor. I said, let me tell you, if it means a choice between cheap labor and knocking growers out of business, I'd rather see the growers go out of business. I said, because we're not going to subsidize anyone here. I said, when we declared that strike about a month ago, that was a declaration, no more subsidies, no cheap labor. Either you shape up and become efficient. That's why I said, the problem with you guys is you're not efficient as growers. And that's why you're afraid, you know, of a union. You're afraid of a lot of other competition because you know you can hack, you cannot hack it out as a businessman. If you were a good grower, you would be afraid because you'd make it produce for everybody. This is the kind of thing. And some people like that. Yeah. But then the meeting ended after about almost 2 hours. And then I was rushed by, about maybe 20 young kids, you know. They came to ask me questions, but they weren't, they were giving me the elbow and kneeing me, and, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, around a little circle, you know.
Oh.
And our guys, well, they weren't, you know, I traveled, you know, it was only Marshall and Jessica. But Marshall's smarter than hell, you know. He knew, he saw it right away, so he was just rushed right in, you know, and began to push like this, you know. Began to push, and then this created a pushing situation.
Yeah.
And then by that time, you know, the school had a guard there. He came and pushed him out, and I didn't know, I wasn't hurt. I just got a few ribs, you know, sores. But, you know, they were saying, Mr. Chavez, what about the strike? And they let me have it, you know. But I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't say help or anything.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say don't do it.
Yeah.
And then, I know, if I don't take it, I don't care. And I hit my arms against my ribs like this.
Yeah.
And they said, name, you know, so I had my, I was crossed like this and I had my arms like this.
Yeah.
You know, and and I was just right because they were pretty tall, and so I was just the right size for the knee. But nothing, you know, very damaging. Right. This guy came and got me, and he was the school guy was very worried, you know, the dean or
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so he got the guard, got two guards, and they walked me all the way to the car. I was no afraid of them.
Yeah.
I didn't care, you know, at that point. But that was the only time that that I was in a place with the growers, you know. Well, there was another place, but I was in Visalia. But most of them were not growers in strike, and I wasn't.
Oh, at the meeting.
At the meeting, yeah. I wasn't there when they were. They were all the growers there.
Yeah.
I thought it was one of the best meetings I've been to.
Money and food for the farm workers. You also speak at Mills College.
Oh, that was that.
Opened November 10, 1960.
The girls came, you know, and I don't know if they knew what they were getting into or not, but they came, you know, they were very interested. It was a small group, you know. So they got me, and they got about 100 girls or so out to the lounge there, and I spoke. I think it's a small college. And they're all girls. It's an all girls college.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good one.
A very good college, yeah. And I picked up some money, and there were a few girls that were coming down here, and they were interested. But something happened, we lost the contact.
Oh.
I think as more people came from Berkeley, they were less likely, less inclined to come. I don't know what happened. But they sort of drifted away, and they had a drive, a food drive, they had they sold Welga buttons, and they were active for about 6 months or so.
Yeah.
And then it dissipated. Yeah.
Your list speaking dates. Caesar will speak at Bakersfield College for collecting money and food for the farm workers. He'll also speak at Mills College in Oakland. November 1065, civic groups oppose strikes, rights tone. Good old CSO again from Delano.
Go a bit further. Say which groups opposed?
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce, and then four or five other Mexican organizations, club. I didn't say that, but I think that was one of them.
Commerce and six Mexican American organizations.
I think
you said, yeah, it doesn't name any of the rest of them.
No. Well, there was a drive by.
Can you see butter and salt in a minute? Do you want sour cream?
Oh yeah, I got that.
There was a drive on by El Espinosa and Herrera and Pedro. They wanted to sign. I think the only one that refused to sign was the Ideal Club, which said that they weren't any better, but they said they were neutral, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we had asked them to support us, and they said no.
Yeah.
It was sort of, and Rudy Humada was the president, and. Or about to be a president, but he had a lot of influence there, and he wasn't about to sign. You know, he was pretty radical for them. But I did feel, you know, sad, you know, that all these groups had made the statement, you know.
Yeah,
because I knew that they didn't know what the issue was. Now, of course, you know, I knew that they weren't going to fight for what they did. They were just saying it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it was more a... I sent Dolores and Mayan out, or Dolores and Richard, about to talk to the groups right after that, and they were complaining that I hadn't asked permission of them to strike, and they were resentful. It was mostly an anti-Chavez thing, then they were resentful because I hadn't asked the permission to strike them. I had to go out and get a license from them.
That's right.
And,
there's two kinds of meat there. They cooked some outside.
Oh.
I didn't know that they were doing that when I served the other stuff.
So we,
Arraignment of Chavez is set for November 17th on the use of that loudspeaker. Filed by the stove. November 10, 65, the state checks union charges about growers. Representative of the State Department of Justice. Charges that the grower deliberately sprayed pickets, harassed and pointed shotguns at them, drove too close to pickets, set dogs on the pickets and beat them. November 11, 65, FWA plant, New Blast, Mark Delano, Fundrow. Chavez.
That's the poverty grant. A New Blast. Somebody blasted it. That's what's coming up right now, I think.
Plant WA on the poverty grant would be set up as soon as the association sponsored strike ends. November 12, 65, students, ministers donate to strikers. Campus Christie Center at San Jose State College. And the ministers and laymen of the East Oakland Christian Parish. November 14, 65, Delano farm workers seek student support. Chavez will make it a SNCC meeting in Fresno.
Make it a SNCC meeting.
November 15, 65, Bay doctors will form strike clinic. Ron Levant and Gary Bowman.
Play that back and let me laugh. I want to have Marion listen to that. Okay. Marion?
Yeah.
You have a moment?
Association sponsored strike ends. November 12, 65, students, ministers donate to strikers. Campus Christie Center at San Jose State College.
Focus.
And the ministers and laymen of the East Oakland Christian Parish. November 14, 65, Delano farm workers seek student support. Chavez will sneak at a SNCC meeting in Fresno.
We'll sneak at a SNCC meeting.
November 15, 65, Bay doctors will form strike clinic. Ron Levant and Gary Bowman.
Yeah.
Hey.
Ron Levant's the one I got the letter from.
About?
Yeah, I got a letter. It was signed by you. It was signed Cesar Chavez, and it said at the bottom, contract Ron Levant. In fact, that's where I first met Leroy Chatfield, at his house, Ron Levant's house.
Oh, yeah.
I got this letter. I just mentioned Delano. I'd read it in the newspaper or something. Wendy Goebel's picture had been in the paper, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did was, this girl I worked with said, you know, I got a letter somebody sent us. She belonged to MCHR. You might be interested in. So she brings in this letter, and it says, Dear da-da-da-da-da, Delano Strikers, we need doctors and nurses, and it was signed Cesar Chavez. And then for information, contact Ron Levant. So I called Ron Levant and said I was a nurse, I was interested. He said, you know, there's some guy from Delano who's going to be at my house. Why don't you come over tonight? I said, what's his name? He said, I don't know who he is. It was Leroy.
No.
And Bonnie was with him. Bonnie Burns. Yeah, and he's a nut at Levant.
Yeah.
But that was the first, that was the guy.
Committee and medical student, so University of California.
Huh? She's got tremendous memory for me.
November 15, 65, Chavez says great pickets will continue. November 16, 65, Chavez enters plea of innocence. Porterville. November 17, 65, Delano Group asks great strike probe. And to see as though Delano and Rich Rose. Hi. Sociedad Progresista Mexicana Latin America.
Are you on the radio? Oh, that's, oh, did you get a new... Oh, I have that tape for you. Oh, have you?
Yeah. Oh, good.
Good. I wanted to give you some, Caesar.
Okay.
You know what it is we're talking about? He's got a tape, the same tape that Jim took of you when you were on the fast out there.
Oh?
Yeah.
Oh.
But Jim can't find that tape. But the father also had a tape going at the same time, so he gave it to a guy that's writing his thesis up in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
And now he just got it back from him. So he's going to be... It's for one of these.
Mm.
It's this size.
Jim can't find his, huh?
No. And it wasn't sent back to...
We want facts, not propaganda. Remember 1865?
Yeah. I think that... our tech was... not to respond to the CSO.
Yeah.
To ignore him completely. And this threw him into a real crisis situation because that's a la Alinsky crisis situation.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have anywhere to hang their hat, you know. We were turning our backs to them. We refused comment, you know.
Yeah.
We didn't even, we did say, but we didn't refuse comment, you know. What we said is, when they asked the press, they said, well, they have a right to their opinion. It was better than saying no comment or, you know, taking
yeah.
the audience. Well, they have a right to their opinion.
Next order of business.
Yeah. They died out of
ship will sail without grapes.
Ignoration.
Huh?
They died of not of ignorance, but of
Yeah, of being ignored. Yeah.
Being ignored. What is the word? It's not ignoration.
No.
It's not ignorance.
I don't think there is. I've never seen that word as a mm-hmm. noun. It's just a verb.
Sailed without 1,250 cases of grapes. Teamsters agreed to honor the line of the four pickets on Pier 50. November 18th,
the valley. Things were getting pretty tight for us in San Francisco. It's at this point that somewhere along here, you know, where we get some FLC unions involved I don't know really what happened, but there was something that Green got some heat over there, and he called me, very mad, and I wish I had the exact word, but I'll give it to you as I remember. He said, there was a call, he said, this is L. Green for you, see, there, and he never called, you know. So I said, hello, and he said, Caesar? Yes. This is L. Green in Stockton. He says, what the hell are you doing in San Francisco? Goddamn secondary boycott. You're raising all kinds out with those long-haired sandals, you know. He went on and on. And I just let him go, or, you know. I just let him go, you know.
Yeah.
And, I interrupted a couple of times, and I said, are you through? I'm not through. He was, and he thought that he had me, you know. So I said, when he got through, I said, are you through? He said, yes. I said, you know what? You can go to hell. If you don't like it, you know what to do. I said, you or the FLCIO or no one's going to stop our drive. You understand? So just go to hell, you know. If you think you're going to call here and intimidate me, you know. And he said, if you don't stop that picketing, I'm going to pull the aid from you. I said, you haven't given me a goddamn dime and you know it. And I said, we'll make a bit of difference. You count zero here. I said, you don't count a damn thing here. You better know that. I said, we run the show here. And then he change over, and he wanted to say, well, you know, we've got to work together. And I said, we went to work together with you. We went to the motel to try and work something out with you, and you turned us down. And there's nothing to work together for. We're working together with the Filipinos, but we're not working together with you, and you better know that. The things were yet for you. But that was, I remember that. Something happened, and somebody must have called him and given me hell.
Oh, sure.
in a great matter.
Probably Pitts.
Probably.
Role of migrant ministry in the strike. Porterville Congregational Church withdrawn, proposed $3,600 a year. Grant
there were
support
several of those. But they found out that while they this money was being taken away from them, it was being made up in the cities.
Yeah, and Boswell withdrew his way back, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
But the cities were picking up the slack, and the micro ministry became a real
It got its base where it should have gotten its base at the very beginning. Then they've been able to do, they probably wouldn't have done too much, but they've been able to do a hell of a lot more than they ever did with their damn, sewing parties.
I'll never forget Chris when I first met him. I had a good feeling when I met him, The first time I met him was in Los Angeles. He came.
I'm sorry, I'm breaking my own rule, but Jim Holland is here.
I'm putting things as I remember them, Chris called the CSO office and said he was coming and said he had just been appointed to fill the job that had been vacant by.
And
wanted to meet with me, so I thought it'd be a good idea to meet with me and Tony. So we arranged to meet over at a Suwali's, that restaurant across the street from Sears Roebuck.
Yeah.
And he was a minister, but I didn't know that I wasn't aware that I had been there before for lunch, and I wasn't aware that the thing had changed. But anyway, I remember because he was a minister, and I was kind of embarrassed because we went to the restaurant at noon, and they were having those, and I didn't do anything besides. I didn't know that it was going on, but it was going on those,
go-go?
Lingerie, I think, or something. They had those parties, and the girls come out with brief panties and very skimpy clothing, model. And there was a whole bevy of them, I guess, a whole bunch of kind of the table, And Tony and Chris and I were there. But anyway, I talked to Chris about this later on. He didn't even notice it, Oh, he noticed it, but we were talking. So anyway. But I had a good feeling when I got through the meeting that he was,
It'll be all right.
Yeah. I was saying, that I thought the migrant ministry had moved quite a bit, but that it could not exist in this vacuum, that it had to take sides, and, he was agreeing. And soon after that I moved to, I kept in very close touch with him. And I liked him from the very first, very first time I saw him.
Yeah.
We kept in close touch, when I came out to the valley, they were very happy.
This was before.
Yeah, before that was. I was in few months before. When I came here, in fact, the first week I was here, I guess after I came back from your house, I went to the migrant ministry. They have these camp out, what do they call them? Mm-hmm. Seminar. They get the whole staff together, a retreat sort of. And I really enjoyed it. I was there for 3 days, and it was just easy. I really relaxed and we talked. All the talk was around farm workers, the work I was about to start. That's where I met Jim.
Oh, yeah.
He was just starting. That day, he started working with the migrant ministry that same day. Yeah. And so Jim was with me in the first house meeting we had. Chris arranged it so that I could be with Jim.
Great man.
Well, yeah, but I could use his car and his credit card.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
it. So Jim came and he worked with me for some weeks. I forget how many weeks now. Jim later told me that he was very depressed, at one point that we came home and we were all we were eating was beans, that's all we had.
Yeah.
and he felt very. But then I borrowed there. I borrowed his mimeograph, and I kept it for a long time because mine, you know, was very, very old. And
Helen wants to talk to you.
Oh.
Supervisors take no action on loudspeaker plea by Larry Atlanta. Said he had to make another application. November 19th, Delano resolution declined.
Yeah. Larry applied for a
it's straight open.
Sure. Larry applied for a loudspeaker permit. They weren't permitting us to use it, and they clamped down, we couldn't use it, you know. And the board of supervisors, it was shifted all the way up the board, you know. And they wouldn't act on it. And that's when it came out. But later on, they didn't permission.
Well, isn't that, didn't Dave Havens go over and make an application?
That
was after I got out.
Yeah.
A meeting called by the Delano Chamber of Commerce, attended by 200 persons. November 1965, dismissal ruling for cleric is held up. That was the ruling on the reading by Reverend David.
Oh, Hayden, yeah, that's all. That's
Jack
good.
London.
Yeah. That's all described in Welga.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he goes into great lengths. He was terribly impressed by that.
Yeah.
Well, he was impressed very greatly by the Jack London anyway. You know,
yeah.
He makes quite a
bit. Yeah.
Not that was actually disturbing the peace. November 2065, Kern Judge, that's five dates for Stryker trials. Judge Davis said 10 would be tried in each of the following days, January 17th, 20th, 25th, and 31st.
Were they ever tried?
No.
Never?
No, the charges were dropped.
Oh.
The charges were dropped.
November 20th, community service aid is sought by grape strikers.
Community service aid?
Cesar Dolores led a delegation of 60 strikers to the executive board meeting at Hotel California. That's the statewide
Hotel California.
CSO board.
Oh, yeah, California.
November 21st, first of a series of articles by Ron Taylor assessing NFWA. Says NFWA is Cesar Chavez, and Cesar Chavez is the NFWA. November 21st, 65, two units quit as CSO votes strike support. It's Rich Grove and Delano units. November 22nd, 65, the second article by Ron Taylor, Chavez and FWA win widespread backing. That's where he quotes Ross and Chavez. November 22nd, 65.
Called to Syracuse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the book was, you know, what I thought of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I talked about your consuming passion for
mm-hmm.
the poor.
Yeah, he was after me, you know, about Alinsky. I said, well, Alinsky didn't. I said, you know, it's another character that's not even mentioned, you know.
Yeah.
So why don't you call him? You know, just, yeah, who is it? So I gave him the name, you know.
Yeah.
I said, call him, you know. He's a guy that knows. I saw Linsky once every 6 months at the most, you know.
Yeah.
Once every year.
Yeah. He was bending my ear up while he was trying to pick my brain. Well, he admitted he wanted, you know, when I went up there the other night.
Yeah.
Because he's writing a book, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to get some kind of a grant, so he'll be able to take off for about 9 months to finish that. He's done a lot on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then something else over there. And so he wanted to. Well, I wasn't giving him too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, you know,
mm-hmm.
who knows how he'd use it.
Yeah.
You just wish an orange cruise to strike. November 22nd,
no, that was
the National Executive Board of CSO support.
Yeah, they, there was something curious that happened there. About the same time, you know, that this announcement came with the Teamsters and the AWOC were going to organize orange pickers, you know, and so forth. And something about a legitimate union, you know. That was the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, you know, I think that the Teamsters came because of Yale Green.
Yeah, I do too. In this interview, I mean, in this tape? that Risco did on
him? Yeah.
He talks about his long-standing friendship with the Teamsters and that if it hadn't been for him, why the Teamsters would have invaded the fields long ago. It was because of his friendship with the Teamsters they stayed out of the fields. Mm-hmm. And that he thought it was a great mistake, that the pact that he'd had with them for quite a long time was no longer in existence, and he thought that was a great mistake.
Oh, because the Kircher
made
him cut it out?
And sever the...
Sever the... Right then?
Yeah.
So anyway... It must have been around March, I guess, April, February, March.
What? When they had to sever them?
No, when they talked, when they interviewed him.
Oh, I don't know.
But I was going to talk.
No, it was in May.
In May?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right after the March. I was going to talk. What was that last point that I said? Oh yes, I was going to talk about it. Got it. Oh, yeah. And about that that time that this happened, I got a very curious call, you know. The caller wasn't curious about the content, you know. The newspaperman.
Ron Taylor?
Ron Taylor called me and said, Caesar, there's an orange grower who's the head of an association who said he wants to talk to you. So
that's the one that lives up near where we had the retreat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He lives over in that area, and we met at that motel, remember? It was a very hush-hush meeting, you know. Yeah. We met about four times.
Yeah.
And
you had him followed?
Yeah. And I was never certain, you know.
Yeah.
But he did talk to the Delano growers, and I thought it was a move to try to divert our, you know. At one point, he said, you've got to strike us here to make us, you know, to get the other guys into line. I'm with you, but...
Yeah.
And I said, oh, fairly interesting. I was about to be diverted.
Right.
Yeah.
22nd, National Executive Board of CSO supports NFWA grant. Third of a series of articles, November 24th, 65, by Ron Taylor. Growers, strike is NFWA power bid. November 24th, 65, court freeze. Clerk who reads two pickets.
What else is new?
And Judge Davis ruling on the Jack London scab thing by Dave Havens. November 24th, 65, Presbyterian Clinic will air church roll at the First Presbyterian Church in Fresno. November 28th, 65, youths raise ruckus at NFWA Hall, go to court. Four local teenagers were cited in juvenile court after they refused to leave the headquarters of NFWA. Found 18 bottles of beer in their car. Roger Cerrone said several truckloads of donations have been received from San Francisco, and picketing has continued through the rain and cold. A few remaining crews finished the harvest.
That was getting... It was at this period that the morale was sinking.
Sinking.
Yeah, it was already sunk, you know. It was the lowest we've ever been. Well, it began to decline, you know.
Yeah, this one you were gone quite a bit of the time, too.
Yeah.
Around the country.
Yeah.
This is the time that Richard took them all over and bought a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe you fixed his little wagon for that.
Mm-hmm.
28, 65, brewery spokesman rule out negotiation with union heads. Those were leaders were Joseph Brodsmer, Filler Up, Alan Grant. They said they're not about to sit down and negotiate a labor contract. November 28th of 65,
not
the line not opened. Doc Waltz, Delano Grapes. That was the one that Tony Mendes was involved in.
That was the one that Tony 65. Called me and said, you know what? There's no... I just put up a picket sign and everybody stopped working. He said, he was all elated, you know, he didn't know what to make, but he and his wife were out there. I just put up a picket sign and everybody stopped working. And I said, fine.
Keep it up.
Yeah. That was the longshoreman.
Accept grower barley offer. At a meeting Sunday, the grower spokesman had said they're willing to negotiate with workers, but not with the leaders of the NFWA or the AWOC. And so Caesar is proposing that the grape makers are willing to meet with the growers without the union representatives. December 65, grape growers reject offer to negotiate. Yeah. Duncan said he was advised by Brosmer that any meetings will have to be an individual matter between growers and their workers.
Those guys really stuck their necks out.
December 1st, 65.
Those growers probably jumped all over. Open.
This is the third time that they have halted the deliveries.
We had a lot of workers that were going to negotiate.
Oh, sure.
California Farm Bureau criticizes church strike roll. December 2nd, 65. Boycott of Kern Grapes brings suit. The Georgia Corporation has filed a complaint district court against the...
That's what ended the Longshoremen Cooperation, you know.
I know.
And we haven't, you know, been able to really get cooperation.
Sure. That's what turned bridges the wall, among other things.
Yeah.
He's already...
Yeah.
Caesar, could you talk to Larry?
Uh-huh.
Conducting an illegal secondary boycott of its grapes.
Oh, that's the,
Longshoremen.
Yeah. Are you getting enough?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was. All I said was that we were talking about bridges.
Mm-hmm.
He never got over that, and never will, probably. Still.
It's too bad that
the Georgia said it cost him $13,000 when they had to bring the grapes back from the Oakland. Send the third two more times.
Huh? Goody, goody.
Yeah.
McFarland in early March. We'll get farm union offices.
Oh, yeah. We're spending a lot of money and time in getting the people from Early Mart to come to Delano and then go out back to Early Mart to pick it. So we...
The headquarters up there.
Headquarters.
Branch office.
Yeah, branch office. They didn't work too well.
But you also had a service, a little service operation there with Sal and Ida.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Ida did a lot of work over there.
Yeah.
No, we weren't ready to really, you know, do the job.
Walter Ruther have been invited to stop in Delano on their way to the AFL-CIO convention in San Francisco next week. December 3rd, 65, NFWA pickets grape loading operations. NFWA has moved its grape strike into shipping area by establishing a 7-block-long picket line on Glenwood Avenue to prevent loading at a piggyback reef.
Well, see, the fields were almost done, empty, and we had to have, you know, we had to keep going. So we started picketing the piggybacks. Of course, the unions never respected the picket line, but it was more of a protest thing than anything else. But it was very cold, and we never stopped the damn truck, but the people kept coming, and they kept on the picket line. Some of these things are amazing, you know, what happens, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know where they got the, you know, they just got this faith, you know, that they're going to win. And I remember, you know, some of the things that I asked them to do, and they said, you know, they did it, you know, they did it, you know.
Yeah.
And they did it with enthusiasm and with, we pick it, it was colder than the devil.
That's where you had those big tin cans out there.
Yeah.
With the fires and
burning in the fires, you know, and Richard went and talked to the... he was in the fire department and hoodwinked one of the guys to give him a permit, you know. There was nothing legal about it.
Yeah.
But then the pressure built and they delivered. Yeah. So it was just the day before Christmas. They came and they took our buckets away. No, they told me we couldn't do it. And they brought, you know what they did? They brought, they sent a the fire truck.
To put the fire out.
To put the fire out. We had the cans and they put the fire with water, you know.
God.
That's what they did. We're freezing, you know. And so then I told the fellow to just dump the water out and rebuild the fires. And they probably rebuilt, and now half an hour later they came. We couldn't stand it. It was very cold, you know. And they came, and the city came again. This time the refuse department came with the police, and they had a fire extinguisher, put the fire out, and they took the cans. They confiscated the cans. And then so we build them in the ground in a floor. So we build them in the
right in the cement there.
Yeah, the cement, and then we began to ask for volunteers, you know, to go to jail for it, you know. And Dr. Lechner was here with his family, and he volunteered to go. Okay. The first thing was he said, "Go." He was ready to go. He made preparations and everything. And everybody was upset. Oh, you know, I was upset, not because of the fires, but the humanity of the other side. You know, when we're cold and we're not bothering anyone, we're doing our job. You know, it's every right in the world. Why can't we just have it? It was a can, and Richard prepared in such a way that it was, you know, it was completely, you know, safe. You know, he checked it with the department and everything.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and they. But we kept that picket line 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
We stayed there, you know, and without cans then.
Yeah.
And see, I wanted to put the cans in and challenge them, you know.
Yeah.
And have everybody thrown into jail. And just let them do
yeah.
it, you know.
Yeah.
But Alex, you know, Alex was not too sure, you know, and so he didn't give me the confidence. This guy, you know, would have done it.
Yeah.
And I know we would have gotten out of it. I had a feeling we could get an awful lot of mileage.
Yeah.
But the city made a stand, you know, that they were not going to to let us get away with it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alex was a good guy, but he never, you know, he never dug into the books, you know, like these guys.
Yeah.
Nothing
different,
he wasn't, you know,
decisive either.
No.
Very indecisive.
But anyway, that was the story that I still feel pretty upset about that that episode.
They didn't go that far.
They had to go that far. They had to be the chicken shit, you know.
Yeah.
Pacific flat cars. December 4th. Pickets failed to halt grape laden trucks. December 7th, strikers picket fields as vine pruning starts.
We used to picket in the day over the fields, you know, and people in there. At night we'd come and we'd rotate.
Yeah.
I was working those guys 14 hours, 16 hours a day. Men and women, you know.
Yeah.
They hung beautifully. They just went through. I think that's I think that the amount of work that you put into it, you know, if we all sit down in a hall and began to moan and cry, I think that we would have dissipated,
sure.
You know.
Don't build up any loyalty.
Yeah, but the work, you know, and the struggle. Just for an inch, you know, we had to struggle. You know. Imagine the effort just to win the right to be able not to be called so we could pick it. Fantastic.
Fresno chapter of MAPA supports Delano grape strike. December 11th, U.S. church leaders will visit Delano strike here. Northern California Council of Churches and a delegation will visit Delano next Monday, Tuesday, including Very Reverend William Quinn of Chicago Bishop's Committee, Reverend Wagner, San Antonio, Texas, Reverend James Bazaar, and
including the group was Robert McAfee Brown, the Protestant theologian at Stanford, who is well-known theologian, you know, and he is one of the highly respected Protestant among Catholic circles in Rome, you know, on the whole question of ecumenism, and he was here. He's very scholarly and very fast. Father Desart, that was a Japanese American. I think it was Presbyterian, and the three priests, and they really, really blasted. You know, I think Quinn was made. The chairman, or they met, you know.
Yeah.
He came for a purpose. He came to give it to the growers.
Yeah.
And the growers wouldn't meet with him, you know. So they went and they started, they went swinging, they weren't holding any punches back. they told us it was, you know. And then the Gloria had a meeting with them, you know, rescheduled, and the Gloria canceled the meeting. So they went directly to the press and talked to them.
Yeah.
And they had a wrong. That
Protestant ministers and rabbis. December 12th, Delano Products ban is charted. Plans for boycott products from the Delano area discussed in a rally in East Los Angeles. 200 persons attended, sponsored by the LA Mexican-American Emergency Aid Committee. It announced that Walter Reuther has invited Green and Chavez to meet with him in Delano on Tuesday in observance of the 100th day of the strike. December 14, 65, Ron Taylor article. National church leaders pledge grape strike help. The 11 clergymen from New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Antonio, Indianapolis met last night and pledged full support. The meeting was at the Filipino Hall. December 15, unions vow all-out aid to farm workers. That was Al Green and James Smith, Joint Council of Teamsters. December 15th,
Unions played the all-out aid to strikers. It was Green and this Smith that later on knifed us by, you know, they were, he was getting authorization to sign behind their back, behind their lines.
Yeah.
Strike were only attacked the 11 National Catholic Protestant Jewish clergymen. Attacked their honesty and integrity. December 15th. U.S. farm labor hearings may be held in Delano, according to Father James Vizard.
Well, that's when we started working on the hearings to get Kennedy here.
Oh, yeah. And he helped, too, huh?
Well, it was Vizard who suggested it.
No, I see.
And he thought he could get him.
Yeah.
Court bars grape shipment interference. A Georgia corporation filed an injunctive suit to stop strikers from preventing shipments of grapes on trucks and ships in Northern California. December 1665, second cleric group makes strike study. Clergyman layman of the Church and Economic Commission of the California and Nevada Council of Churches has completed its own study of the Delano grape strike. December 16th, picket line heaters removed by police after the city refused to renew their fire burning permit. December 17th, pickets block grape loading of ship at San Francisco. Prevented the loading of 50,000 shipment of Delano grapes, Portland, Oregon, Sweden. Longshoremen and shipping clerks refused to cross the line, supported by both AWOC and the NFWA. They were handed restraining orders by an attorney for Georgia. December 17, 65, churches revived dead issue of Delano strike. Growers said the strike was a dead cause until the churches stepped in to revive it. That was Jack Pandle, Bruno DeSpoto. Both growers pointed out the harvest of one of the largest grape crops in history is now complete. December 1765, Reuther pledges monthly grape
but that would do
subsidy.
It was a big crop
due to
a combination of the forces in it.
Yeah, yeah.
The natural forces. It's the biggest yield in the history of the industry.
God. How about when you first got word of that, you were so... God.
We had to be, you know, this year.
Yeah.
We know nothing about the table grape industry.
No. How could this be? You probably thought it was just propaganda.
At first I thought, you know.
Yeah. Couldn't be.
Couldn't be, but then I soon find out.
Yeah.
The eye of support to 500 wildlings during Delano grape strikers last night. And he went to an unprecedented secret meeting with growers. December 17th.
That one, he came in and they charged a plane to Delano. And Jack Conway and Paul Schrade and Paul Schrade and Jack Conway came in a day ahead of the meeting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the day ahead or that morning. And I didn't talk to him but Wendy and Dolores and it was Marshall.
We're negotiating with him.
With whom?
with Jack Conway and Paul Schrader.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking to him, you know. And there was talk that Ruther was going to give the AWOC, you know, money.
Yeah.
And so I called him in and I said, if he doesn't give half of it, we don't want any. We want exactly half of it. If he doesn't give us half of it, then
forget it.
Then forget it. It doesn't matter. And we need the money back, and I don't care how much money it is. And so but they were, you know, they were very nice to us right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Jack and Paul. And they were interested, you know. They were the first big labor leader that come to the to us, you know, not to Delano, to them, but to us, you know. And we went to the airport, and I was kind of backward. I didn't want to go in front because, you know, I was in the FLCA one, you know. But I think it was Paul that said, you know, come on, you know. And so Larry and I met him. And I don't know if Green went to the airport or not, but Green was here. But I know Larry and I walked with him, you know, and then, so we had our picket line. That was when we had our picket line with, and then 2 days later, earlier, Jim Holland had brought us, or a week earlier, had brought us brand new picket signs. And you've seen those pictures of Ruther where they're round.
Yeah.
Well, he had made them, you know, beautiful. When so many hunters, you know,
yeah.
Boy, just took them, you know. In less than a month, we didn't have any. Can't keep them anyway. He came in and we had been told by the city that we couldn't parade. Remember that anti parading thing?
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, we can't walk. You know, we can't parade. He says, why? So there's an ordinance. He said, well, let's do it anyway. We started parading, and the police were all over. You know, and when you know. They respected him. Yeah. There was a lot of respect for him from the police and from everybody, you know.
Yeah.
They just started walking, and so we just fell in right in with him, you know. So Larry and I were walking side by side, and we walked up and down with a picket line, you know, and all the people were just, you know, this is the first big labor leader come to Delano, and they were just... So then from there we went to the Filipino Hall, and we had lunch, dinner there. And... Green was there, and he was talking, so Ruther wanted to, you know, he was very direct. He wanted to know how much money he was getting from the FLCIO. And I don't think Green wanted to tell him in front of me, you know.
Yeah.
So he said, well, we're not getting enough. And he said, well, you know, answer my question. And he forced him to say, tell me how much you're getting. That's where I found out that they were getting...
$20,000.
He was complaining he wasn't getting enough. And I said, oh, my God, $20,000. Jeez, you know. Boy, we were getting $20,000. I thought to myself.
Yeah.
So anyway, then we just got through eating when the call came from the mayor. He was really, really in love with. He wanted to meet at the chambers. So I wanted him to go alone. You know, he said, "No, I'm not gonna go alone." He want me to go, I have to take Chavez and Abe Leon and Green and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay. So we went and we had a little meeting. And Ruther was great, you know. He told me, he said, well, he brought a different kind of perspective, you know. He told me, he said, there were the city council was there, and the mayor, and some of the police, and the chief, and the city manager, you know, and I, other people, I don't know who they were, but we were there at the table. And he said, Ford said he was going to lock the doors and weld the doors shut if the union came in. Ford is very prosperous today. And he went on down the line, you know, what they said, rubber and steel.
Yeah.
Those guys should meet with the union right now before things get very difficult for them. Because the union's going to win. They're not going to stop the workers. This is a historical fact. The workers are going to win. We're going to stick together, and we're going to win together. So then we came back to the hall, you know, and then we had the meeting, and it was jam-packed. We publicized it widely. So, you know, the way they had arranged was that people would speak, but then Larry was the master of ceremony. And then he introduced me, third to left, and then Green, and then Luther. So when I got up, you know, Mail had organized the floor, you know. Unknown to me, you know, I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
But when I got up, it was a lot of applause. Well, a lot of it was naturally, but a lot of it was, you know, also manual and stomping and cheering and, you know. And,
spontaneous demonstration.
Yeah, and I didn't, well, it wasn't that much planned, you know, but a section of it, anyway.
Rooting.
It would have happened, but it wouldn't have lasted that long, you know.
Yeah.
And so I spoke. And then Green got up, and they started to, you know, some, our guys were, you know, just very quiet. And you could, it was very embarrassing, you know. Had I known what was happening, I would have not permitted that. I felt embarrassed that it was happening, you know.
Yeah.
But it just sort of, they sort of held back, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But then he went through the speech, and his speech was pretty bad. He said, stick with this Anglo. He's got a big heart. A big mind, or something, you know. I don't know. It was, but stick with this angle, you know, and something like that.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a defeatist kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then Ruther spoke, and he brought the house down. Oh yeah, he was great. He well, the people were hungry, you know, for support. And here was the first time we were being made a part of it, you know. We had not really been made a part of it, you know. We were always on the outside by labor. The church and the students were all coming to us, you know, but labor and was, you know. And the people, you know, although they knew very little about organized labor, they know about labor. And, you know, people sense these things. So they felt like they were equal now, you know, like.
Yeah.
But it had nothing to do with folks. And folks were very, very kind. And they opened the hall to us, and we would eat there. We could, you know, they were very, you know, this is their custom, you know, their nature. But it was Green mostly, you know. Well, not mostly. Well, Green and Gines and and that was split because Larry and Andy and Philip were the other way, and they wanted to work together. So, but Ruther spoke, and it was. People really liked it, and that hall was jam-packed. It was just, you know, just standing room only. The people were crushed in, you know.
Yeah.
And there were people on the windows outside. It's one of the biggest crowds we've had.
Who interpreted?
Gee, who interpreted?
Oh,
I think the Lord.
Oh.
But I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But he talked about. You know, about the, you know, that that if it was up to the employers, they would put a key in back of us and wind us, you know, like a clock, you know.
Yeah.
So we could eat only when there was work, and then we wouldn't eat, you know.
Yeah.
And it was very clever and very good. He really, really was good. Well, I say that because the people, you know.
Sure.
So, anyway, then right after the meeting, there was a press conference there where we had the accounting now.
Yeah.
And the TVs were there, you know. So then the time had come for us, you know. We didn't know, see, Paul and Paul Schrade and Jack didn't know what was going to happen about the money.
Uh-huh.
We knew there was $5,000 coming. Oh, in his speech he said, it was going to give $5,000, but because this month was the month of the Prince of Peace, I was going to add another $5,000. It was $10,000 for December, and then beginning in January, $5,000 each month. But even then, we didn't know. So there was some talk, you know, that we were going to get maybe $1,000 and $1,500, and then we get $3,500, you know, because they were FLC affiliated.
Yeah.
So we let them know, you know, not. I don't know if they knew, but I when that came to me, I told our guys, no, we're not going to take that cent, you know. We're poor, but we're proud, you know. We take half of it or we don't take time.
Yeah.
So now when the time came, you know, for the thing, he said it's going to be equally divided.
Oh, he did, huh?
Yeah, the only thing that he said was that it was going to come to, it was going to come to the AWOC account.
Yeah.
AWOC was to give us half.
Took him quite a while to do that, didn't it?
No, they did. And see, then they would send us a copy every time they send a check, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then Paul was on top of it.
Yeah.
Paul was immediately captivated, or you know, by the
mm-hmm.
by the Southern movement, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying the others weren't, you know, but Paul was more, you know, Paul
sure.
is very, he understands it.
Sure.
You know? He was really, you know, gung ho,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And I think that that we owe a lot of it to. Well, to Jack, but I think Paul got in deeper right away, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he was more, you know, mm-hmm. just a little while he was here. He was under the Wendy, and he had people,
yeah.
you know, sort of
yeah.
got around him sooner, you know. But anyway, both of them were raised. Right? And so when he made the presentation, you know, he said it was happy.
Really?
So, with the, so we were very happy. You know?
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
Oh, well, that, I went home that night, you know, I said, oh, God, at least, you know, at least there's a little money.
Yeah.
See, we hadn't paid any bills. We hadn't done anything except buy gas.
Yeah.
We were in trouble, you know. So that, we were getting some money, but hardly anything.
Yeah. A little few gay collections.
Yeah. No, we were doing, no, we couldn't do gay collections. We weren't the FLCA.
No,
we weren't
true.
Doing anything.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Okay.
Grower with hitting clergy. Grower was Phil Patty, was charged with hitting David Havens and the Reverend James Grake.
That's when we were marching, see, and Kruth was in front, and Larry and I were on either side of him, and so there were other people marching, and Jim and
Havens
were over there. They were walking, you know, so Phil Patty got up, you know, and hit Jim, hit David, but he hit Jim, you know, right in the chest like this, you know. And he, Petty's a small guy, you know. And Jim just kept on walking, you know. And he got in a car and took off.
Petty,
yeah. And we knew who he was.
Where was he? Just in, sitting in his car there and he jumped
No, he
out
just
here?
Drove in the car and parked and then went over and
yeah,
hit
so
him,
I mean,
you know.
Yeah.
Nuts.
December 18th, Chavez urges governor to mediate grape strike.
Oh, yeah.
He said he wants the governor to step into the strike and use the power and prestige of his office to bring about a negotiated settlement. In New York, a proposal for a boycott of two wines marketed by Shelley Industries was made by James Farmer.
They never mentioned Shelley.
Head of CORE.
No.
Mustangs the group as friends of the grape strikers formed to implement the boycott.
It's
on that same date, December 18th. December 27, 65, city action to mediate strike fails.
The city manager put out a feeler, you know, and I typed the letter and I ran. I gave it to the city clerk or somebody there in the city office to give it to the mayor, you know. But boy, it really cramped down on him. And you can see later on from the same paper, you know, where he said that to ask for mediation would be to be taking sides.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, they really put the squeeze on him.
Abandoned the previous proposal to call a state conciliation service in an attempt to settle a grape strike. Said that both sides must request mediation before the state agency can step in. And that to ask for mediation would be taking sides in the strike. December 21st, Delano wines go off shelves in
that's
four stores. These
are
the
Shelley
wines.
That's the beginning of the,
came
beginning of the
as a result of pickets.
Yeah. And the boycott started. We're renting the
We don't know if we're in the right direction, so it's better to read this and then you just tell us what you think.
Okay.
Okay.